Estoy muy inquieto porque exigimos la educación.
Mientras el 14,2% del Producto Interno Bruto es invertido en la guerra, en las zonas rurales la cobertura escolar apenas alcanza el 60%. Angie Camacho, Telesur, Bogotá, Colombia.
La Oficina de la ONU para la Coordinación de Asuntos Humanitarios, OCHA, confirmó con el gobierno de Haití que hasta el momento se han registrado casi 10.000 casos de cólera, de los cuales 643 han muerto. Del mismo modo, OCHA señaló que se han empezado a identificar los primeros enfermos en Puerto Príncipe, la capital del país. Las precarias condiciones sanitarias, sumadas a los deslaves e inundaciones producidos por el huracán Thomas, podrían acelerar la propagación del padecimiento, advirtió la agencia. Hasta el momento se han habilitado 15 centros para el tratamiento de la enfermedad y los hospitales públicos y privados de todo el país han recibido equipos para responder a la emergencia. Rocío Franco, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
El Instituto Politécnico Nacional, una universidad fundada después del triunfo de la Revolución Mexicana para servir al desarrollo industrial de México, está siendo desmantelado y va en camino a ser convertido en un centro que capacita técnicos para servir las necesidades de las compañías transnacionales. Así lo revela un artículo publicado esta semana en la revista Contralínea de México. La periodista Flor Goche cita a profesores y estudiantes del Politécnico que denuncian ese es el verdadero objetivo del proyecto de Reglamento General de Estudios, impulsado por la actual administración a cargo de Xochitl Bustamante.
Este fue creado después de la Revolución Mexicana y fue creado precisamente para dotar al país de profesionales que se desarrollaran en la industria estratégica, principalmente de las carreras que se dan ahí son ingenierías, y este es el objetivo principal del Politécnico. Y bueno, lo que nosotros abordamos en el artículo que es la portada de la revista de esta semana es precisamente cómo con todas estas políticas neoliberales se está perdiendo la esencia de este instituto. El Instituto Politécnico Nacional, para recalcar lo que decía anteriormente, es el proyecto educativo mexicano más importante del siglo XX y además es la institución que está realmente ligada al Estado, o sea, es una institución del Estado mexicano. Esta diferencia de la UNAM no tiene autonomía, en fin. Entonces, si nosotros decimos que hay un desmantelamiento del Politécnico, es a partir de que se pretende aplicar dentro del Instituto un Reglamento General de Estudios que, entre otras cosas, viene a llamar a los alumnos usuarios de servicios educativos. Esto, bueno, apuntan algunos especialistas que menciono en el artículo, como Hugo Aboites y Adrián Ramírez, que es el presidente de la Liga Mexicana de Derechos Humanos aquí en el país, que tiene que ver con la mercantilización de la educación, considerar a la educación una mercancía y no un derecho que aún sigue consagrado en la Constitución mexicana. Hay otras medidas que vienen dentro de este reglamento que implican que en el Politécnico se den certificados de competencias técnicas a los alumnos y que ya no se den títulos de licenciados, es decir, que se pasaría a tecnificar también la educación que se dan en esta institución en lugar de privilegiar que egresen ingenieros más bien de esta institución.
¿Y se sabe quién estaría elaborando los nuevos planes de estudio?
Este proyecto corre a cargo de la Secretaría Académica del Instituto Politécnico Nacional a cargo del doctor Efrén Parada, que también cito en el trabajo, pero también responde a un proyecto de corte europeo que es el nuevo modelo educativo que se ha aplicado en México y que no solamente está vigente en el Politécnico, sino que en muchas otras instituciones de educación pública pretende aplicarse este modelo. También cabe recalcar que este modelo ya está muy avanzado dentro del Politécnico. De hecho, algunas de las cuestiones en las que enfatiza este artículo es que muchas de estas reformas que se están proponiendo en este proyecto de Reglamento General de Estudios ya son una realidad en el IPN, ¿no? Se busca con este reglamento legalizarlas, reglamentarlas, pero ya se están viviendo en los hechos en el Politécnico. Los especialistas que consulto precisamente para este trabajo hablan de eso, de cómo la educación se ha ido enfocando precisamente bueno, la educación que se imparte en México a este modelo de crear mano de obra y que otros países sean los que desarrollen la tecnología. Aquí hay también otro punto importante en este reglamento, que es esta cuestión de la movilidad académica, a través de la cual se promueve incluso la fuga de cerebros hacia el extranjero. Esto quiere decir que, bueno, los alumnos regulares, es decir, quienes no deben materias, se les facilita todo para que vayan a estudiar al extranjero y, bueno, alertan profesores del Politécnico que esto es una clara medida para institucionalizar esta fuga de cerebros y que los estudiantes más talentosos no estudien en México, sino en el extranjero.
Estudiantes y profesores con larga experiencia consideran que las propias autoridades, de manera deliberada, buscan deteriorar la educación politécnica.
Rebajar la calidad de la educación a propósito, o sea, medidas deliberadas para acabar con la verdadera esencia de la institución, que, como lo mencioné hace un momento, es dotar al país de profesionistas en la industria estratégica, ¿no? Un país en donde se está privatizando todo esto, en donde los recursos ya no son del pueblo, de la nación, del Estado, sino que están pasando a manos de particulares. En esta lógica, obviamente, ya no se necesitaría formar profesionistas, ¿no? Entonces, profesores hablan de que es una actitud deliberada de las autoridades politécnicas y del gobierno mexicano para acabar con la institución.
Académicos y estudiantes del Instituto Politécnico Nacional se organizan para expresar su oposición al desmantelamiento de la institución, pero encuentran serios obstáculos.
Hay un fuerte sentido de ser politécnico en esa institución. O sea, en realidad son gente que se pone la camiseta y que ve una problemática y que, como también tienen tiempo en la institución, te decía que hay estudiantes que terminan su carrera ahí y son profesores y que toda su vida la viven ahí, obviamente están en contra de estas reformas. No son solamente estudiantes o activistas, sino también profesores, gente con muchos años de experiencia en la institución. Entonces, obviamente, en la medida de sus posibilidades, ellos están organizando, han hecho distintas asambleas. De hecho, si nos llamó la atención incluso abordar este tema, es porque desde hace tiempo se han hecho movilizaciones en el Politécnico al respecto. Entonces, esto es importante también destacarlo, pero por otro lado también, en Contralínea también hemos publicado otros textos en donde hablan como también de las medidas de control que hay dentro de esta institución para mantener calmados a los estudiantes principalmente. Una de ellas es que quien se encarga de la vigilancia dentro de las instalaciones del Instituto Politécnico Nacional son policías. Entonces, ellos lo que hacen es que si bien a estudiantes que están repartiendo información y todo, les quitan su credencial, ha habido casos que están documentados de agresiones en contra de miembros de la comunidad estudiantil por parte de los policías. Entonces, hay también una serie de medidas de la autoridad para detener como toda esta movilización que se pudiera generar por parte de los estudiantes, de profesores, en fin.
Era Flor Goche, periodista de la revista Contralínea, que en su edición de esta semana aborda el desmantelamiento del Instituto Politécnico Nacional de México. El reportaje de Flor lo pueden leer en la revista Contralínea en contralinea.com.mx y la entrevista completa con la periodista se encuentra en nuestra página blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com.
El Partido Socialismo y Liberación tiene su conferencia anual en Los Ángeles este fin de semana, donde los organizadores prometen hablar sobre los obreros y obreras del mundo. Gloria Larriba es integrante del partido y ex candidata presidencial en 2008.
Nosotros hemos estado muy envueltos en la lucha para los derechos de los inmigrantes en todo el país, incluso este verano cuando los gobernadores de los 50 estados se reunieron en Boston. Nosotros, como parte de una coalición, iniciamos una protesta para exigir la revocación de la Ley 1070 en Arizona.
El partido se formó en junio de 2004 bajo el fundamento de que solo el socialismo puede resolver los problemas sociales y económicos de las y los trabajadores. En sus 6 años de existencia ha logrado tener presencia en varias ciudades de la Unión Americana. Entre otras cosas, los organizadores planean dar reconocimiento a luchadores sociales, algunos de ellos encarcelados hoy día por desafiar el sistema que ellos califican como injusto y desigual.
Eso incluye Mumia Abu-Jamal, Leonard Peltier, los 5 cubanos, Lynn Stewart, la abogada que fue sentenciada a 10 años por haber defendido a presos musulmanes y los tres presos afroamericanos de una prisión que se llama Angola en el estado de Luisiana.
Además del reconocido Ramsey Clark, Gloria Larriva nos habla de otras voces que participarán en el encuentro.
También tenemos importantes oradores como Ron Kovic, el veterano de Vietnam, Arturo García de las Filipinas, y Mari Bray, el director ejecutivo de la Sociedad Musulmán Americana. Varias personas, incluso Dr. Henry Clark, el director ejecutivo del Movimiento Ecológico.
La veterana activista subraya que solo es posible generar riqueza con el trabajo de los hombres y mujeres que laboran en sus centros de trabajo, y por lo tanto, a ellos les corresponde beneficiarse con esa riqueza.
Van a ver la gente que no tiene trabajo, cómo es que juntos podemos en este mundo lograr un mejoramiento en la vida de toda persona, porque los trabajadores crean toda la riqueza. El capitalismo está destruyendo el medio ambiente, está destruyendo la vida de millones de personas, y lo que necesitamos es una lucha unida en solidaridad con toda gente trabajadora.
Algunos de los participantes de la conferencia de este fin de semana hablarán sobre el desempleo, desalojos y embargos de casas, la persecución de migrantes y disidentes, así como algunas soluciones para los y las obreras.
La conferencia para el socialismo va a comenzar este sábado y continúa hasta la tarde del domingo en USC, la Universidad de California del Sur, en Los Ángeles. Empieza a las 9:30. La gente se puede inscribir antes. Y si quieren saber más detalles de cómo venir a la conferencia, pueden llamar al 213-251-1042.
Gloria Larriva es integrante del Partido Socialismo y Liberación y ex candidata presidencial en 2008. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Ha llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Nosotros hemos estado muy envueltos en la lucha para los derechos de los inmigrantes en todo el país, incluso este verano cuando los gobernadores de los 50 estados se reunieron en Boston. Nosotros, como parte de una coalición, iniciamos una protesta para exigir la revocación de la ley 1070 en Arizona.
My name is Brad Johnson. I'm a former Clear Channel radio engineer, and when I'm in Santa Cruz, I listen to Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a la revista Contralínea y al diario La Jornada de México.
And actually, that's it for that. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That was Información Pacífica, and we're now going to have una programa en inglés y posiblemente un poco palabras en español. Stay tuned.
Where does the corporate bloodsucker come from, Professor?
Some have said it is the bastard offspring of the legendary feudal bloodsucker. But I believe it was created when corporations were declared legal people.
Legal people?
It was 1886, a little-known land use case here in California. Lawyers for Southern Pacific Railroad argued that the 14th Amendment, which declared slaves free and equal citizens, should be extended to corporations.
Corporations?
Yes. A superior court judge agreed, and corporations became legal people with many of the rights of you or I. Yes, they are immortal.
Immortal?
They feed on tax breaks, bailouts, and the privatization of public wealth. And
And in the last few months, their power seems to be growing.
Professor, this is preposterous.
More preposterous than corporations running welfare systems.
Oh, well, I never said that.
Tax rates for billion-dollar companies.
No.
While social services crumble. No human would create such horrors. Only the inhuman mind of the bloodsucker. But fear not. Every corporation has a charter granted by the sovereign people. If we can revoke that charter, the bloodsucker will be destroyed.
And that, in case you were wondering, was a briefie from Hotel Transylvania, actually 1600 Transylvania Avenue, which... actually refers to Pennsylvania Avenue and has to do with our Führer, but actually talked about a prior Führer. But we now have a new Führer. No, he's now the old Führer, but he's been around. That's President Obama. In the studio, we have a would-be Führer, Steve Plaich, who is still licking his wounds from the shitty council race. Steve, have you recovered yet from your incredible defeat?
Pennsylvania 65,000. Oh, we're not doing that.
No, that's Beechwood 457. You got to get your number right.
77 Sunset Strip. We're into numerology today.
For sure.
No, I am, after my electoral butt whipping, I am perky and ready to go and getting ready to file for my 2012 run at City Council.
Steve, you're a man who runs around the city doing all kinds of things, suicide prevention, needle exchange, needling the... Actually, you don't really needle the powers that be. You tend to, I don't want to say you suck up to them, but you attempt to, create events that otherwise might not happen, like the infamous upcoming Thanksgiving meal at the Civic Auditorium, formerly at the Vets Hall before the city and the county closed it down.
Indeed. We'll be having that at the Civic Auditorium between noon and 3, 25th of November. All are welcome, including the good Mr. Norris.
Well, welcome or not, I show up to these public events, whether they like it or not.
That's right.
You know, matter of the right to be in a public place, that sort of thing.
You're bringing with you your broadsides and...
My broadsides go wherever I go. That's how it is.
That's right.
However, today you also visited the Vets area, not the Vets Hall, because that's closed and locked down, and the Vets don't seem to have the military discipline to, should we say, affect any kind of occupation of the building. But they did have a Vets of Armistice Day celebration in the parking lot next door.
They did. Matter of fact, they had a podium set up and flags and some speeches from the local. Bob Patton, who you know, who I found out today is president of the United
Veterans Council.
United Veterans Council. Yeah, I thought it was a motto post, but another fellow was there. Was president of the motto post. And he spoke, and I can't remember what his name was.
Yeah, he's an old familiar figure. And yeah. His name eludes me, too. He's Spanish, Mexican-American.
But I think maybe because of the closure of the Vets Hall, it was a smallish gathering. And I think their main celebration in March and the parade and things like that were in Watsonville. It was supposed to be a day-long affair.
Uh-huh. Well, again, you know, it's not so much that they haven't got a place to throw this celebration or the Thanksgiving Day meal, but that for the rest of the time, for the rest of the year, people are severely inconvenienced. And somebody else's agenda, seems to me perhaps a vindictive agenda, is being fulfilled by the closing of the Vets Hall.
Well, it could well be, because what they indicated to me today was that they had had two structural engineers go into the building and look at the alleged violations or red flagging.
Found them superficial.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I heard that went through with at least one engineering survey, and we talked to Bob Patton in March, I think, about this issue. It's now November, for those of you who don't have a calendar. And the county has still kept it closed, and not a word from Mayor Mike Rotkin or any of the other great patriots in town. My concern, of course, as I've said before, is facility for use by homeless vets.
Yeah. Well, they did make one announcement, which certainly would have pleased you, is that they they're trial is opening November 15th, and I think it's Department D of our courtroom.
Yeah, they're trying to get the, what are the issues in that trial? Did you talk to them at all about that?
They did not say. They just said, we're going to court, we're litigating. I don't know what it is that they're doing.
Months. Yeah, I mean, I know you yourself have a lot of legal training. In fact, you worked for 10 years in San Jose with a law firm.
I did.
And continue to work on legal issues for homeless people here in Santa Cruz.
I do.
But I have very little confidence in the courts. And I, judging from what happened 2 days ago in the unreasonably disturbing noise case of Brent Adams, or Big Drum Brent.
And the attorney in that case was local legal luminary Ed Fry.
Ed Fry was the attorney, but I don't think it would have mattered who the attorney was.
He's the, oh, never mind.
The commissioner was Kim Basket.
Ah.
A tisket, a tasket, don't be caught with basket is, of course, the new chanty that's being sung up and down Pacific Avenue, sotto voce. She's the person who allegedly has legal training and oversees a Department 10, the basement courtroom in the county building.
But evidently difficult telling time, as you were saying.
Adding. She has problems adding.
Adding.
She gave, she found Mr. Adams guilty of unreasonably disturbing noise for playing his drum on Pacific Avenue with his band. Actually, it's a two-person band, him and a guy called Wireless. Do a gig, and their group is called Love Gutter, and they've done it every week or so. They show up for about an hour, and Brent is always, at least this is what he says, and I haven't heard people contradicting him, that he doesn't play for more than an hour. He picks out spots that are particularly distant from residences, such as the area in front of O'Neill's and the area in front of New Leaf, which is, as far as he can calculate, the most distant from the Palomar, the El Centro, and the St. George.
And 1010 Pacific.
And, well, that's the St. George.
Yeah. 1010 Pacific.
No, 1010 Pacific is not the St.
It's down the way.
Right, 1010 Pacific is further down the way. It's actually past
They're treated to the drum circle.
Past the Centro. 1010 Pacific is, well, it's two long blocks away from the drum circle, which is on the levee. And that happens only one afternoon. Anyway, and I'll be talking about Brent's trial. I actually wrote a bit about it, but I haven't posted yet on IndieBay. You saw my reflections at the last Huff meeting, which we had on yesterday at the Abbey Cafe. Happens every week, Wednesday, 10:30. Check it out in the morning.
Free coffee and cookies.
And you do tend to get cookies, too, if I get down to the cookie shop. Although, will I be continuing to purchase from Trader Joe's when they refuse the right of people to petition in their parking lot, as supposedly guaranteed by the California Constitution and the Pruneyard decision? I don't know. I think it's rather, I don't like hypocrites. Trader Joe's masquerades as this liberal place. But you talk to this personnel, and they're quite content squashing any kind of political pamphleteering, petitioning, and so forth in the parking lot, claiming that it bothers the customers. Well, you know, political messages sometimes do bother people, but they have a right to be, and in fact, it's important that they be allowed to be disseminated in public places. And that, apparently, if that's the new policy of Trader Joe's, and that is, seems to be, not just the policy of the property manager. That was the latest fallback position of the Trader Joe's clerk I talked to last night when I was, or this morning, actually, when I was purchasing chocolate-covered Dunkers, which are the...
It was a pleasant exchange, not your usual harangue.
Actually, they weren't Dunkers. They were kitten cookies.
Indeed, kitten cookies, which I have some in my bag right now.
You're even sneaking away. I wonder where those kitten cookies went. Now I need look no further. You can't... Kitten cookies are these tiny chocolate cookies. In any case, let's not get stray too far. The point is, it's really important to retain what shredded vestiges remain of the First Amendment in Santa Cruz, and particularly in traditional spots. And ironically, the group that was being harassed were fundraisers for the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. And the local ACLU, which has such luminaries as Mike Rotkin and Ryan Coonerty, actually has nothing to say about any of this and hasn't been in defense of even its own fundraisers, apparently. They don't give a shit, or maybe they just haven't heard about it. I don't know, but I've talked about it, and I believe they must have heard about it one way or another. At least the local ACLU, I would have to assume, has been informed, but
well,
maybe not.
I just find it curious that now they have a form that, in fact, notifies you. Now, that form is based upon the decision in that case. Evidently, that's the reason that they are able to do that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The form I saw from an ACLU petitioner about a month ago, he showed it to me. He was going to come on the air and actually talk about other things, like he's also a poet and he's into other issues. But he was a canvasser for the ACLU's, actually for Grassroots, or some group that the ACLU pays to raise funds for the ACLU and raise membership. he showed me the form that the Trader Joe's gave him. It wasn't from the property management company, which rents out these spaces to Trader Joe's and the other businesses that adjoin Trader Joe's or adjoin the parking lot that adjoins Trader Joe's. But it was from Trader Joe's itself. And it said, you have been warned for trespass, yada, yada, yada. And so I pointed this out to the clerk, and he said, well, the Vrunyard decision guarantees that we have the right to kick you all out. Now, of course, that's not true. The Vrunyard decision says exactly the opposite. It says that I think it requires... There have been some limitations on the Prunier decision, which is a 1980 decision concerning the Campbell Shopping Center.
That's right, exactly.
Over the hill.
Yeah,
and
exactly,
you know, it said essentially though, if the public is allowed access to a shopping center, you can't prevent them from engaging in First Amendment activity there.
Yeah,
you can restrict time, place, and manner. You can set up a place
reasonably
restrictions.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that's actually the Prunyard in Campbell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Didn't I say Prune Yard?
I said Prune Ridge. You said Prune Yard. I say Potato.
I think it's Prune Yard, yeah.
Prune Yard.
I think we both agree.
Yeah.
Which is not unusual.
No.
Although
not
necessarily usual either. But in any case, there is a right people have to distribute their literature, their poetry, for that matter, on the shrinking public spaces in Santa Cruz. And they are shrinking. I mean, because of the protests at City Hall, which have been peaceful, but have involved homeless people, and they're concerned about their right to sleep legally, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. The city has closed off the huge city block at night that used to be open, which is the whole City Hall complex.
Mm-hmm.
And they've declared after 10 o'clock, if you're there, that is an infraction crime punishable by up to, it's actually up to $1,000.
And in fact, some folks have been ticketed for that?
And there have been numerous tickets issued for that. They're using that rather than the sleeping ban, because the sleeping ban tickets have to be dismissed under the new ordinance. I don't know why. I can't speak to their motivations, but it's interesting to speculate that that may be one of the reasons that they're issuing those tickets. Anyway, public spaces are being closed down. The space on the levee, which is where the drum circle used to be every Wednesday afternoon, has now been roped off. The library benches are now roped off. They're not roped off, but they're forbidden for use after 9 o'clock at night, an hour earlier than City Hall closure. And this is all being done without any kind of public process. And it is even being done in violation of the, I think, unconstitutional ordinance that allows them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that ordinance stipulates that they have to consult with the Parks and Rec Commission before closing down these areas, not get its consent, but just consult. And that hasn't been done. Dinette Shoemaker, who's the head of Parks and Rec, has simply conferred with our new Führer, Martin Bernal, the city manager, and his uniformed guard dog, Kevin Vogel, the acting police chief. And they have just decided, well, we'll close off this area, even without consulting and following the law, even though there's no indication of any crimes other than the crime of sleeping in a protest situation. And it has been, I think, reasonably argued by Kerbucker Chris here over these airwaves and others at other places and other times, that if you sleep with signs around you in a public place, that can be a form of symbolic speech. That is your way of saying, this is a right that we have to have, and you can't really punish us. Now, there are those who say, well, so what are you going to do? Protest the speeding law by going 100 miles an hour and then saying, hey, I'm just protesting it, that's symbolic speech.
Well, that's unreasonable.
I would say that's unreasonable and also poses a public threat. Whereas sleeping,
good point,
although snoring may be disturbing to some, and the sight of homeless people it may be disturbing to others, and the reality of the lack of public facilities may lead others to say, if they're sleeping, they must be crapping and pissing as well, which is not necessarily an unreasonable conclusion, but would lead one rather to suggest that they open public facilities at various places in Santa Cruz, or that the homeless people, as on this occasion for the first time that I've noticed, in a regular way, provided them themselves. That is to say, a housed person, Ed Fry.
The Ed Fry Memorial.
He provided a porta potty. Actually, Paul Lee funded it, and Ed Fry provided it for 3 months in front of City Hall and also in front of the county building. So, all this is apropos hassles at the Trader Joe's, and has to do with the fact that you will still get cookies, one way or another, if you come to the Huff meetings on Wednesday mornings.
Which have been, I think, interesting and pretty well attended recently. We actually have an agenda that you We dragged you through kicking and screaming. I would say rather
we dragged you and your associate, Becky Johnson, kicking and screaming from your side conversation.
Why is that name from my sidekick?
Your sidekick, yes.
Yes.
Actually,
thinking about forming a comedy team and coming on your show.
I'm not laughing, but that's how it goes. You can't please everyone. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We do have weekly meetings, and you can help us without coming to meetings, without any of that stuff. Just give a call to the HUF line, 423-HUF. If you want to talk on the air, perhaps you don't like HUF, as numerous writers on the Sentinel website don't. Don't like me, don't like Becky Johnson, don't like the ideas we put forth. You're welcome to talk about that, too. And that's the number to call for that particular discussion is the studio number, which is 427-3772. 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz.
And of interest, and we were talking about this earlier, that the veterans did mention Becky Johnson today twice in her open letter to the Board of Supervisors protesting the continued closure of the Vets Hall. So, and HUF was mentioned as well.
You know, I think I'd like to read that letter if I can find the damn thing. You don't have a copy of it with you, of course.
I do not, but I know it's on our emails, respective emails.
I think it is, and I think I may be able to find it. Of course, when I say that, that usually means
that you will never be able to find it.
It's much more difficult.
No matter how much your time given in.
Well, I think I'm going to. I'll give it a try. I'm also going to read a little something because this isn't really Veterans Day. It's like this day has been kidnapped by the military. It actually is Armistice Day. Armistice Day was the day that World War I ended, you know, that mass slaughter that went nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it did produce revolutions in Germany and Russia, you know, and that's a good thing. I mean, you know, the fact where the revolutions went may not have been the best, for sure, but the fact that there were revolutions, but again, at a huge cost, there were, you know, millions of people died in these wars, and of course, the same thing is happening now, as you may read in the paper. A Führer Obama has declared that, you know, we're not likely to get out before 2014. That's suddenly the new date for Afghanistan, even though the government is struggling to negotiate with the Taliban, regardless of what the U.S. wants to do.
The Canadians, however, are leading the way. They are withdrawing their entire contingent of 3,000 troops by the end of 2011.
Right.
So no more back bacon will be being offered
those
to the Afghanis.
Those Canadian gutless wonders are sneaking out the back door.
No labats and the back bacon sandwiches for you, Afghanis. So there you go.
Well, let's see here. I think I have found the actual letter.
Oh, great.
This is the letter to the Board of Supervisors that HUF authorized, Becky Johnson wrote, and then HUF approved. And I guess you say was mentioned by the vets today.
It was mentioned by Bob Patton a couple of times today.
Dear supervisors, the last meeting of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, HUF, we voted to send a letter of concern to the Board of Supervisors for Santa Cruz County. At issue is the disputed closure of the Santa Cruz Vets Hall, which has ousted many community groups, veteran services, and a major facility used for service to homeless veterans. While some veteran services have been relocated to Emmeline, many of the uses served by the Vets Hall have gone wanting. We desperately need this facility to be restored and reopened. To add to our ire, rumors are circulating that the county failed to conduct proper maintenance by denying necessary funding in the few years preceding the closure. Furthermore, veterans groups have conducted their own research, and their engineers report claims that the damage is not as severe as alleged and does not require the closure of the entire building. Regardless of which report is correct, the county is currently negligent in performing the needed repair work to the building and hastening its reopening. Please reply to this email with the reasons for why this is taking so long and when we can reasonably expect the reopening of this building. Sincerely, Becky Johnson, spokesperson for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And that was the letter that was read. I don't expect that Chair Neil Coonerty is going to reply. As I've mentioned before, Neil tends to give HUF members, like Becky and myself, short shrift. Although I don't think we want any shrift at all from him.
Well, it's interesting. I think Tony Campos was the most recent president of the board. And now, of course, he was voted out by the District 5 group. Greg Caput is now the new supervisor. So, frankly, I don't know, because Neil Coonerty was the previous president. So I don't know where that will go. Maybe Ellen Peary, perhaps would be the next logical choice, or Mark Stone. I don't. John Leopold really hasn't been on the board long enough, you know, to be elevated.
I was looking though at the Counterpunch website today, and I saw an article, "Laying Down Arms," by Peter Leinboff, that I wanted to read. It's not too long, and it concerns Veterans Day. On the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, the great powers of the world signed the armistice, laying down arms after 4 years of the bloodiest war in history. That was 1918. Now we call it Veterans Day. What caused the armistice was the refusal of soldiers to fight. They refused to go over the top anymore. In Russia, France, England, Italy, they refused to participate in the slaughter which had begun in 1914. What we learn from Armistice Day is that the soldier is the front line of the peace movement. We've got a pretty ragged front line, I've got to tell you. Sailors and soldiers mutinied against the war, turning their arms not on so-called enemies, but namely brother soldiers from across the world. Instead, they turned their arms upon the officers who otherwise sent them to the butchery of the trenches or ordered them to a freezing death in battles at sea. In late October 1918, at Kiel and Wilhelmshaven, the home ports of the German fleet, the sailors refused the orders of their officers. Soldiers were brought in to force the sailors to obey. Instead, the soldiers embraced their cause, Frieden und Brot, or peace and bread.
Peace and bread.
One such sailor was a former stoker named Karl Artelt, who had shoveled coal into the fires which kept the steam engines of the battleships burning. On a voyage to the Far East, he witnessed the Chinese Revolution of Sun Yat-sen. Later, perhaps, as the engines of the German naval squadron were transformed from coal to oil, he became a skilled metal worker in the engine room. In other words, his experience below decks put him at the central themes of his historical epic, imperialism and the oil machine. And he used these experiences to overthrow the warmongers. Such men put an end to World War I. Together, soldiers and sailors formed direct democratic councils. Steve, you don't have to wait till 2012. Form your own democratic council. On 9th of November 1918, a socialist republic was declared in Berlin. Hindenburg and Ludendorff, the German generals, had agreed to an armistice. So, honor the soldier who takes direct action for peace. Honor the soldier who thinks. Honor the soldier who brings empire to its end. Remember the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. Bring the troops home. That's Peter Linbaugh.
Well done.
He teaches history at the University of Toledo. He's written the books The London Hanged, The Many-Headed Hydra, The Hidden History of the Revolutionary Atlantic, and his most recent book is a book called Magna Carta Manifesto. And I actually sent him an email offering him an opportunity to speak on free radio this evening.
I thought you were going to say Magna Carta, truth or dare.
I don't know why you would have thought that. Sometimes you have the most bizarre sense of humor.
Interesting, indeed.
Wild and crazy guy.
There you go. But no, very nice. Very well said. Very well spoken. And I don't think any people really consider the fact that the soldier can be the front line for the peace movement. And in fact, should be.
Yeah. Oh, well, of course, they're the ones who can. They got the guns.
Yep. Well, that's another thing.
You know, I mean, it's not just the guns that count. I think a lot has been appropriately said about the power of mass action by human beings who don't have guns, who show up in great numbers and cause change, cause different revolutions, and that's happened before. Look at the Soviet Union and the countries, its satellites in 1989, 1990, and you see a revolution that happened without guns. So it can happen either way.
Peace Camp 2010.
Peace Camp 2010 is not really a revolution, but it was certainly a protest.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also talked to another, well, I didn't talk to, I got an email from another individual who I wrote, another Counterpunch writer. Counterpunch is a sort of a lefty website run by Alexander Coburn and Jeffrey St. Clair. I've been a faithful reader and a parrot for the website for about a decade, although I try to, you know, be not entirely close-minded. He had an article that I thought was apropos. It's not really specifically about Veterans Day, but it's dated November 11th, and it certainly applies, unfortunately, to tomorrow, the next day, and probably the year to come. It's called America's Devolution into Dictatorship, License to Kill by Paul Craig Roberts. The United States Department of Justice, SIC is a phrase, literary phrase, which indicates this might not be the proper spelling or the word, or it might be misused
this is
in
what
some
I meant.
Way.
Yeah.
Justice is not really what the department does, but let's say what they call themselves, justice. Routinely charges and convicts innocents with bogus and concocted crimes that are not even on the statute books. The distinguished defense attorney and civil libertarian Harvey A. Silverglate published a book last year, Three Felonies a Day, How the Feds Target the Innocent, which conclusively proves that today in freedom and democracy America, we have punishment without crime. The same Justice Department, which routinely frames and railroads the innocent, and I haven't read the book, so I can't vouch for its substance or even say what the substance is, argued in federal court on November 8th that the U.S. government, if approved by the president, could murder anyone it wishes, citizens or non-citizens, at will. All that is required is that the government declare, without evidence, charges, trial, jury conviction, or any of the due process required by the U.S. Constitution, that the government suspects the murdered person or persons to be a threat. The U.S. Justice Department even told the U.S. Federal District Court Judge John Bates that the U.S. judiciary, formerly a co-equal branch of the government, has absolutely no legal authority whatsoever to stick its nose into President Change Obama's decision to assassinate Americans. The unaccountability of the president's decision to murder people is, the U.S. Justice Department declared, one of the very core powers of the president as commander-in-chief. The argument of the Justice Department that the executive branch has the unreviewable authority to kill Americans whom the executive branch has unilaterally, without presenting evidence, determined to pose a threat, was challenged by the American Civil Liberties Union and the Center for Constitutional Rights. The outcome of the case will determine whether President George W. Bush was correct when he said that the U.S. Constitution was nothing but a, quote, scrap of paper. It is my opinion that the American people and the U.S. Constitution haven't much chance of winning this case. The Republican Federalist Society has succeeded in appointing many federal district appeals and Supreme Court judges who believe that the powers of the executive branch are superior to the powers of the legislature and judiciary. The founding fathers of our country declared unequivocally that the executive, legislative, and judicial branches were co-equal. However, the Republican brown shirts who comprise the Federalist Society, and also not to mention the Democratic brown shirts who are running the executive, have implanted the society's demonic ideology in the federal branch and Justice Department. Today, the erroneous belief is widespread that the executive branch is supreme and that the other branches of the government are less than equal. If Americans have a greater enemy than neoconservatives, that enemy is the Federalist Society. Disagree with me as you will, but now let's look at the development from another perspective. I'm old enough to remember the Nixon years, and I was a presidential appointee, confirmed by the U.S. Senate in the Reagan administration. I think he was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, this guy, Paul Rogers.
I know that name.
For those of you too young to know, and those of you who are too old to remember, President Nixon resigned to avoid impeachment simply because Nixon lied when he learned about the burglary of the Watergate office of the Democratic Party. Nixon lied about when he learned of the burglary because he knew that the Washington Post would make an issue of the burglary if he launched an investigation to defeat his reelection. The military security complex and the black ops groups in the U.S. government was angry at Nixon for smoothing U.S.-China relations. I never heard this theory before, but it could be true. The Washington Post, long regarded as a CIA asset, that's also possibly true, hid behind its liberal image to bring Nixon down. Woodward and Bernstein wrote thriller-type reports of midnight meetings with Deep Throat in parking garages to get the scoop on the date of Nixon's knowledge of the meaningless burglary. Let's assume that I have it all wrong. The fact remains that Nixon was driven from office because of the Watergate burglary. No one was harmed. Nixon did not kill anyone, except maybe, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese, or claim the right to kill without proof of or accountability American citizens. If the dastardly President Nixon had a Justice Department like the present one, he simply would have declared Woodward, Bernstein, and the Washington Post to be a threat and murdered them by merely exercising the power that the Obama administration is claiming. Nixon might be too far in the past for most Americans, so let's look at Ronald Reagan. The neoconservative Iran-Contra scandal almost brought down President Reagan. It is unclear whether President Reagan knew about the neocon operation, and if he did, whether he was kept in the loop. But all this aside, what do you think would have been President Reagan's fate if he or his Justice Department had declared that Reagan had the power, as Commander-in-Chief, to murder anyone he considered a threat? Instantly, the media would have been in an uproar. Law schools and university faculties would have been in an uproar. The Democrats would have been demanding Reagan's impeachment, and his impeachment would have occurred with the speed of light. Today, in America, approximately 25 years later, the ACLU has to go to federal court in order to attempt to affirm that, quote, if the Constitution means anything, it surely means that the president does not have unreviewable authority to summarily execute any American whom he concludes is an enemy of the state. In reply, the Justice Department told the court that murdering American citizens is a, quote, political question that is not subject to judicial review. The freedom and democracy government then invoked the state secrets privilege and declared that the case against the government's power to commit murder must be dismissed in order to avoid, quote, the disclosure of sensitive information. If the Obama regime wins this case, the U.S. will have become a dictatorship. As far as I can tell, the liberal media and most Americans do not care. Indeed, conservative Republicans are cheering it on. That's by Paul Craig Roberts. He's an editor of the Wall Street Journal and an assistant secretary of the U.S. Treasury. His latest book, How the Economy Was Lost, was published by Counterpunch. He did respond to my email and said he would be
The executive historically had the power under the Aliens and Seditions Act to detain or imprison Americans and by extension to murder them. I mean, isn't that historically an executive power?
I don't think it's an executive power to kill them.
No, but I'm saying by extension.
Well,
you know,
but
if you take the argument.
The issue here is, apparently, the father of somebody who was assassinated or is on the hit list of the U.S. is suing the government, claiming that it does not have the power to kill this person. That he hasn't had a trial, he hasn't been convicted of anything. Unless he's in a military zone and is an active threat in an immediate situation, they don't have the power to run off and assassinate him. So I guess what I'd say is, no, I'm not aware that hitherto the government and the CIA has, of course, been accused of, and no doubt has, assassinated people covertly.
Yes,
but they've never
course.
Said that it was justified in court. I mean, and that I've heard. I mean, you know, maybe you've heard otherwise.
No, I'm just supposing, you know, speculating on what the historical references, the historical implications might have been. It's an interesting theory. I'd love to see how that court case is litigated, presuming they are even allowed to carry it on further. Without having it dismissed, appears to be the challenge.
What
now.
Chilled me is just the sudden realization that I'm living in this kind of a country. I mean, you forget about it from day to day because, you know, you go have your next meal and with the homeless protest and this election.
I find it difficult to think that that's ever far away from your mind, that potentially exists.
Well,
knowing you as I do,
it's so
I think
explicitly
that, yeah.
allowed.
Well.
To me, I think I've sort of ignored it. I just have that feeling.
I mean, it's one of those things. Is it possible to be astonished but not surprised? You know, that kind of thing.
Chilled.
Yeah,
I mean,
well.
I just suddenly feel that I've been missing something for a while. That.
Well, I think the chilling aspect of it would be to me is to feel that you are powerless to do anything about it. Now that. It seems like the most important point to me. Is there anything we can do about it beyond talking about it, bringing it to light, you know, actively advocating for, you know, this kind of a thing to be litigated in court fully to make a determination about whether or not our country is actually killing people?
Well, I mean, the question is whether anybody gives a shit. That's the
real
problem.
But isn't that always the question? I mean, besides you and I, perhaps?
Well, I mean, in organized ways, so that people are out there shouting, wait a minute, you know, the president doesn't have assassination powers.
Well,
people are not saying that anymore. There doesn't seem to be, I mean, I think he's right. There would have been a massive reaction in the 80s or in the 70s if Reagan or Nixon had tried to do this. Yet now, with the Democratic Führer in power, there is no response. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. Or a few, I mean, ACLU and the Center for Constitutional Rights and a few commentators bloggers.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in the 70s and 80s, you had those issues were, for some reason, galvanized and focused through the rage of a generation. You know, people said, okay, Richard Nixon is killing our dream of fair governance or democratic process, something like it, beyond whatever it is that he may have done otherwise. And that galvanized a whole generation of people into getting out in the street and saying, no, we cannot allow this to happen. Similarly, in the 80s, when they had Iran-Contra, that generation, the next generation from that, had a galvanizing issue. You know, is this a galvanizing issue to the generation now in 2010?
Well, I think that, first of all, there was a Democratic opposition out of power in each of those instances. And so, frankly, I have to be rather cynical to say, not cynical, I have to think realism here may be construed as cynicism, to say that this is a power issue. If they can get rid of the Republicans and get into power using this issue, they do. But once they get into power, they'll use the same powers and try to accrete more. Which is what's going on now with Obama and, you know, the massive expansion of power that continues.
Would you say then that there is a progressive movement that is out of power as President Obama drifts more and more to the middle?
The progressive movement has been out of power for decades. Right. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to remember. It hasn't really been in power. It has severely influenced people in power in the 30s. You know, and to some extent in the 60s. But, you know, I don't think it's ever been in power.
But then isn't it the obligation of that progressive movement to do something?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it's not just, you know, Democratic Party hacks and
newspaper editors,
but we don't see. I mean, you and I aren't, you know, out on the streets shouting, "What's going on? What's going on?" You know, the fascists are coming. The fascists are coming.
Although
we may be
at some point in time.
Well,
it's possible.
If we're not going to do it now, I don't know that we're going to do it later. I mean, I don't see that. I think we've been desensitized to the whole thing too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of gloomy. But maybe some of our listeners can chat about this as they sort of proceed down this sad road. Mm-hmm. The phone number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, 427-3772. In the studio with me is Steve Plaich. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And here's an ancient tune from about a decade ago from the San Francisco Mime Troupe's 1600 Transylvania Avenue.
Control of my mind! I am so weak and so alone. I thought I could be in for a nickel. For a nickel, but not for a dime. I'd take just the kit, but not the caboodle. I'm sinking in the quicksand of greed and haven't much time. Oh my Shamina, 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 do you know what you mean to me? I'm your love, sir, Shamina, and you're my Tsarina, but I fear you and I will never be. Now I find what I had is what I wanted, and that who I was is who I want to be. The Pulitzer would be mine for the winning, if I could report all the things that I see. Oh my Shamina, 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 do you know what you mean to me? I'm your love, Surf Shamina, and you're my Tsarina, but I fear you and I will never be. Shamina, 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 I fear you and I've got to warn her, we'll never.
never be we.
Just think about the power and the money. I know everything's going to be just fine. Relax. Important people are interested in StopCom and you. Don't fight the power. Go with it. Say yes.
And Steve is giving us some off-mic criticism of my choice of musical break, which is, of course, well, we know the San Francisco Mime Troupe is politically relevant, although this is 11 years out of date, and the Mime Troupe isn't really locally relevant. In fact, they're locally complicit, I think, with city authorities when they come to town. They couldn't give a shit about Peace Camp 2010 or other activists who are actually engaging in local
struggles. And
they're
not funny.
And
compounding them.
Well, no, so you don't think the Mime Troupe is funny? I think their productions can be funny.
That was hilarity did not exactly ensue.
You didn't hear the whole thing. You had to have been there.
Taken out of context, that was just the unfunny part you were playing for our audience?
I didn't say it was unfunny.
Okay, I would say, let the audience be the judge. Your funny bone had to resonate
in a certain way. You had to be an educated person, and you had to have seen the whole context. But, you know, let's stray from these less important issues and get back to the streets of Santa Cruz, which is the place I occasionally wander down to when I'm not watching old movies. And
I'm on the streets every day. And the mean streets.
Steve Blaich is out there on the streets helping people to avoid or possibly assisting suicides at the appropriate time. But you'd hope the city council in that regard, we might actually pat you on the back for a real public service.
And the commanding general of the... well, never mind.
Yeah. I'm glad that you're cutting yourself short, Steve, because I loathe to think of what you might be saying. Steve and I have innumerable private jokes which become a little tiresome after a while, particularly if you're not in the inner circle here and you don't know what the hell we're talking about. But here's some interviews from right after the last show. Usually I hit the streets on Sunday afternoon. Sunday has a long show from 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon, which people are invited to listen into here on Free Radio at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. And then I go downtown often and sort of wander around seeing what kind of things are happening downtown, you know, what kind of exciting citations are being issued to hardcore sit criminals who are sitting near buildings and things of that sort. And there's an event that's usually happening there around 2 o'clock where Rene Curry gives out burritos, plays chess, gives out clothing and socks and things of that sort, and just chats generally with a kind of a street ministry in a very softcore Christian sort of deal. There's not a lot of, you know, come to Jesus sort of thing, and you're not approached with a, you know, a virulent extroversion, it's good to see you, yeah, sort of thing, you know. You don't have to, although, sort of, Steve, you have that one of those problems. You're kind of a extroverted kind of guy in your own way.
I'm just always making that joyful noise.
Apparently. And it can be a joyful screech, perhaps unreasonably disturbing even at times. But again, that could be your political side. Politicians are extroverted people, usually. You can't really be too introverted and get away with politics if you're running for office, for instance. Anyway, Rene has this thing at 2 on Sundays in front of Borders Bookstore, in case you want to come down and check it out. It's food's free. Rene was originally doing a ministry at the Calvary Episcopal Church, the red church across from Jack's Hamburgers and the Wednesday Farmers Market. But she was she quit and kind of was also discharged because conservative members of that parish pressured Father Joel to stop her her ministry as the groundskeeper, where she was allowing people, provided they didn't violate laws, tear up property or otherwise engage in destruction, to hang out. And that was considered to be in apropos by property owners like Cynthia Matthews, our former mayor, who owns the historical house, as I'm told anyway, next to Jack's Hamburgers.
Yeah.
That's what I'm told. Mm-hmm. Anyway, here's Renee, who I generally interview her once every couple weeks because she goes down and tries to feed people at events that some would consider. Well, it's the police are trying to drive away. For instance, the drum circle. She was often feeding people at the drum circle when it was still at the near the farmer's market before it was driven away by Montree Srinath's Lulu Carpenter's coffee stand and the other commercial businesses masquerading as farmers selling their produce that have taken over the farmer's market area expansion in order to get rid of the drum circle. It should be mentioned, by the way, that Montree Srinath, who used to have a coffee shop out at the Capitola Book Cafe, and for some of us who are patrons of the Capitola Book Cafe, who like to patronize local bookstores, although we're banned from the bookshop Santa Cruz, I don't go to Borders, for example, the chain store there. I go there, but I don't buy there. Montree Srinath had kind of opened up a coffee shop inside Capitola Book Cafe. Well, apparently he has been persuaded to close that down by the management, who seemed to have gotten into some disputes with him about the way he's treated customers, but I wasn't quite clear about that. Manthri runs Lulu Carpenter's, which is a, most people know it's a coffee shop at the foot of the mall or is it at the head of the mall. I never can tell which is the end of the mall.
I think that would be the head of the mall.
Head of the mall. It's right across from Jamba Juice, and it's down there. Near the site of the old bookshop Santa Cruz before the earthquake 20 years ago. And it's...
Didn't Sean Riley live down that way? That away?
Block or two away from there. Sean Riley, this is another in-joke. He's the man who killed the song Downtown, Downtown. Actually, he hasn't really killed it. We're still singing. Yeah. But we're not in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz nearly as frequently with the Huff tables as we used to be.
The newly returned Huff Tables.
Yes, that's another point. As I mentioned, actually I haven't mentioned it, due to the good work of Kate Wells, an attorney who wrote a letter asking Police Chief Kevin Vogel, where the hell are the Huff Tables? And you took them 2 months ago, and they're still not returned, and people have come down and tried to get them. The Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom lent some tables to the Peace Camp 2010 folks to distribute literature, and the police confiscated those tables, the signs, and the chairs, as well as the Huff Panda Bear, and been holding that stuff hostage. Actually, they're not really even demanding a ransom. They just secreted it away, or secreted it away, I'm not sure how you put it. And I went down there twice to try to get it. It was unsuccessful. But when I went down again on Tuesday after this letter from Kate Wells, and I should say the support presence of our very own Steve Plaich, who's in the studio.
Was delighted to be there?
He was delighted.
Lending moral support?
He certainly was tolerant. And
glowering at anyone in the police lobby?
I wouldn't say he was glowering, but he was enjoying
dared
himself.
Dared to give offense to Mr. Norris in my presence. I won't have it, I tell you.
If only he were that way, it would be interesting. But Mr. Plaich is quite the opposite way, actually. He's a kind of individual who would prefer to schmooze with the police chief than to challenge him on, let's say, I don't know, an assassination policy that perhaps local Santa Cruz authorities are initiating in order to emulate the law-abiding policies of the Obama administration.
Well, just to finish your story, if you were intending to finish it at all, that the police method of secreting these things away is to leave them out in the rain.
Yeah, they left them out. They left them out, let's be fair, in the sun for the first month. And, you know, they kept requesting we have the proper numbers and we had to know what date they were taken and we had to be able to do. We did describe them in some detail, I believe, but that wasn't enough for them. But indeed, this property was left out in an open area for the last 2 months through not just one rain, but at least two rains. There were two seasons of rain. Probably three, actually, that have happened in the last 2 months. And when I told this to Lieutenant Mark Sanders, who's otherwise a nice fellow, and he said, well, we just don't have room inside the police station. So apparently they have room to have right-wing meetings of the Santa Cruz neighbors in the community room, but when they forcibly take property away from citizens, they don't have any place to store it so it doesn't get damaged. So I sent a letter to our acting police chief, Kevin Vogel, and I said, in essence, I really appreciate Mark Sanders, lieutenant, and his staff for very efficiently and quickly returning the property once we got down there after it had been held improperly, I think, for about 2 months. And that's good, and thank you for their help, and, you know, commend them for it. But change your policy, A, about this business of keeping everything out in the rain, because it violates state law. Now, I don't have the actual law to cite, but I believe there is a law, 60 to 90 days you have to hold property if you're a police agency. And, in fact, in Fresno, the federal courts enjoined the Fresno government, several Fresno jurisdictions, for destroying homeless property, not holding it. Mm-hmm. And by leaving it out in the rain, you can say that, in a way, they are destroying it. They're not actively demolishing it and trashing it, but it has a similar effect here in Santa Cruz. And I have to also say, in all fairness to Vogel and Sanders and those who are watching the property, that most of the property was protected by plastic bags. Mm-hmm. But some of it was not. And my signs were destroyed. And one table was completely destroyed. So I'm not happy with them. And I also demanded $40 to pay for the table and replace the signs. Kate Wells' response was a merry chuckle.
See, there's the hilarity ensuing right there.
Well, the reason that is not because it's not a just request or demand, but because it's highly unlikely they'll grant it.
Even if I go down there and glower at them?
I would be interested to hear what happens when you have your private chat with Kevin Vogel. I know you were going to talk to the city attorney in order to give him the benefit of the doubt. For some reason, that hasn't happened. Is that because you've rethought the whole matter?
No, that's still on my agenda.
You're going to go talk to the city attorney.
These holidays have intervened.
Well, you and I went to the city attorney's office in order to deliver some legal papers because I am appealing the decision that you can't sing downtown, because that's somehow unreasonably disturbing noise. But we didn't get to talk to John Barisoni, the city attorney, and you made no effort to make an appointment with John Barisoni. Therefore, I have to believe, Steve, that you have perhaps you found better things to do with your time, like actually help people who are challenging the city attorney.
Well, let's just withhold that judgment.
I don't know. Until it seems to be what's happening.
The holiday period passes when I have other commitments, as you well know. I'm the commanding general. Oh, never mind.
Steve is trying to avoid patting himself on the back for his activity in pushing the charity solution to the homeless problem, which is to have meals twice a year that will buck up the community's morale and feed people fat 2 days, while as the rest of the year they have to deal
which
with.
Which is a perfect segue
the
into the
Ron
A. Curry
band.
Tape we were going to play about.
Correct. Let's get back to the Ron A. Curry tape, having babbled on. So let's hear some street interviews and maybe from you, 427-3772. You got two guys here that can just chatter at you all day, and you can chatter back. Yep. Here with Ron A. Curry in the rain, or actually, it's not raining. We're under the umbrellas, actually, at the, Renee's Repast on Sunday. But there are no tables set up, and there are only five of us here. But there are a couple of backpack-looking, what do you call these things? Rolly carts with burritos and other tasties inside.
Water, peaches, peanut butter.
Yum, yum. And plus you have your vehicle parked here with other goodies.
Beanies, umbrellas, socks.
Bibles?
No
Bibles. Good. At least we're taking a step forward here.
There's Bibles, but we don't have them. We're not pushing them on people. If somebody wants them, we'll get them one.
Interesting. We're in front of Borders. I went to the Borders in Seaside. They have like five aisles of religious books now, compared with 1/4 of an aisle on psychology. So that shows you where we're going, unfortunately, or where Borders is going.
Oh, but they're headed in the right direction.
Extreme right direction. You got to say.
So hard right.
Very hard right. It's a hard row to hoe. But you were telling me, actually, both of you were telling me, and we're talking with
Ronnie
and Scott.
Both of you were telling me that the origins of Father Joel's problems, where he's being sued and they're trying to bounce him out of the church leadership as the Calvary Episcopal official who is running the Monday coffee house?
I think they're trying to bounce him out of his position as priest, and coffee house would just kind of go along with that.
Defrock this particular priest and also probably remove him from the coffee
and remove the coffee house from the church.
Yes, he won't be drinking coffee. They have their way.
Apparently, a certain Margaret is either being used or has had an instrumental role in this. What's that all about, Renee?
Italy.
I think that when coffee house came on the scene, her attention was threatened.
This is a woman who was getting some attention from Pastor Joel, but then when his attention turned to the coffee house Arini's, she became upset.
Father Joel, and exactly.
Now, how long ago did the coffee house actually start? This is a Monday evening, once a week, what, 2 or 3 hour deal?
Not when I was doing it. It was an all week deal, but yeah, we have it every Monday night, and actually it's on from 5 to 7, but it's an all day preparation, and it's been going on for about almost 2.5 years now.
And so the first year it happened every night?
No. It only happened one night, but because I ran the whole entire thing, it took me a whole week to get it together, because there's a lot of shopping, there's a lot of prep, there's a lot of, I teach, and so I've got to study. There's a lot that goes into putting on a couple hours of coffee house.
It's also true that while you were doing the coffee house, there was a policy of much greater tolerance toward homeless people week round on the church grounds, right?
Well, yes, because they hired me as their sexton, their groundskeeper, and I tried to make it comfortable for the homeless youth to be there.
And how long did that actual period of tolerance last?
About 6 or 7 months.
And of course, the homeless were regularly breaking windows, defecating on the lawn, selling heroin, right?
Not that I ever saw, but yeah, those would be the accusations. But I was there quite a bit.
I never heard any of those accusations about anything. I was making an extreme hyperbolic statement in order to perhaps tease a smile out of you this rather inclement day.
No. I mean, all those things that were actually, Jax accused them of defecating on their step.
Jack who?
Jack. Jack who? Jax is a hamburger joint.
Oh, Jax, of course, across the street.
Mm-hmm. And, people would regularly complain from the Nickelodeon and that drug use was going on the lawn, and half the parishioners in the church, said they were finding needles and all those things. So those aren't an exaggeration. I cleaned out the bushes with my own bare hands, and I never saw any needles, so I don't know.
Very interesting. Well, how long has Father Joel been under the shadow of suspicion as they've attempted to remove his ecclesiastical vestments?
For about 2 years.
No, I mean, how long has he been under accusation of being unchurchly?
For about 2 years.
Well, but how long has their case been in the ecclesiastical courts?
Possibly about a year.
Really, about a year? So it's as long-standing as I thought. It was fairly recent, like 3 or 4 months.
No. I mean, it took about a year for Margaret to get it to the higher, upper echelon of the Episcopal Church. And then, was I supposed to say Margaret?
No, it's all right. I think I may have said Margaret. You're just simply following up on my exposing. So this Margaret woman was supposedly touched by a homeless person, Jeremy, or was she just touched, as they say in the South?
She did some research, and she figured out what it would take to – there's steps that you have to go through with people to get them off of hanging around on a premises. And so it appeared that she did the research, and then she proceeded with the steps. And it has to do with approaching them, and then it has to do,
warning them they have to leave.
Yeah, but she took all these steps without, just on her own as a parishioner, not because the church was supporting recording.
To clean up the area of the riffraff.
Yes, and then, but then there has to be some sort of a physical attack on you, and so she was aggressive verbally towards Jeremy, and he stood up to say, "I'm not taking this," and he put his hand out and touched her shoulder. Yeah, and so then that was considered to be, you know, an act of, you know, an attack or whatever. But she used that. I mean, that was all she needed.
When was this incident?
That was about a year and a half ago.
And what was the consequence of this incident?
It just brought all, you know, it divided the church in half. It brought a lot of the negative attention from the surrounding businesses because Margaret is friends with people at Jack's. Cynthia Matthews owned a house next to Jack's. They regularly just talked in people's ears and just tried to point out what was going on the lawn and whether or not they approved of it. And there got to be enough people that we ended up having a town hall meeting, regular vestry meetings, and they decided they were going to crack down and make Coffee House something that it wasn't, which my intention was that it would be a community for homeless youth.
And instead, it is now we are switching to slow speed.
It's basically a soup kitchen type thing. I mean, they're doing their best, but, you know.
What have been the changes that you say have altered its character from being a community to now being a soup kitchen?
Well, it used to be focused on the youth because I wanted a place for the homeless, traveling, hippie youth kids to be able to be, and they don't consider themselves homeless, so they don't hang out at our homeless, like River Street Shelter, Coral Street facilities, things that are available for them. And I did a lot of things to create an ambiance in the building, sort of a hippie ambiance, candles, tapestries, lights, music, that type of thing.
New age idolatry, in other words.
No, but
sin of the worst sort.
No, I just wanted it to be a relevant community.
Raven images.
I wanted it to be a relevant community feeling for them to come in, and it wouldn't be so outside.
Heretical teachings.
It wouldn't be so outside of what they felt comfortable with. Now, you know, they're going into somebody else's parish hall, and it's just a little more sterile, and they're running it like a church service, and then they feed them. And they're very good people. They've kept it going. They're doing good, but it's just not the vision I had. That's all I'm saying.
Other than the hippie knickknacks that you put in,
yeah.
Was there anything substantive that you did in terms of longer hours, I don't know, foot massages, something, you know, that one could get one's teeth into? Or are there more substantial changes?
I tried to do a lot of, like, we played chess. We did a lot of art-type stuff.
During the 3 hours on Monday afternoon?
Well, I let them come in all day long because a lot of times they'd be the ones that would be helping me set up. They'd be helping me cook. They'd be helping me clean up. It was all of us working together. It wasn't us putting on something for them. In fact, it was hard-pressed to get any of the church to really be involved. They only got involved when they wanted it to be different and they knew they'd have to get in there and do something about it. But really, it was me, my husband, and then whoever I could get from the streets to work with us.
Now, when you were groundskeeper, for what period of time, again, let me refresh my own memory, how you were the tolerant period during which you allowed people to hang out on the grass week-long, in day and night, was when?
It was about 2 years ago, and it lasted for about 6 months.
Yeah, was any property damaged?
No.
Were any young maidens assaulted?
No.
Were there any drug arrests?
Pot. I don't even know if they were arrested because they're pretty tolerant to pot. I would say the cops were called to the property if maybe a parishioner that didn't like seeing the hanging out going on wanted them to come over and clear the grounds. So the cops were there mostly like to clear the grounds because I wasn't really solid on that, because Father Joel and I sort of had an agreement that we wanted to create a community environment.
Well, how could they clear the grounds without your consent? I mean, if a parishioner didn't like it and they said, call the cops couldn't really clear the grounds without your consent.
They eventually got Father Joel to sign a waiver that the cops could do that. At first, he wouldn't let them. At first, he said he was going to take care of it. But then he's not there enough, so then that was our first problem, is that his work hours...
You were the groundskeeper.
Yeah, but I was only there part-time, so...
How long did the tolerant period of no cop clearing of the grounds happen?
Maybe 2-3 months or so. Yeah.
And the good times ended, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I'd like to say that during that time, there were some issues with how the kids or the people that were there behaved, and any time that anything was brought to them, like, you know, hey, don't throw cigarette butts down, they would pick up their cigarette butts and they would clean up their own trash, and they would try to tone down the anything loud or whatever that was being complained about. They did a great job of responding positively to any changes they were asked to make. And so I was actually really proud of the way they acted.
So how involved were you, Scott, in this whole venture? Were you around much?
I was around probably 2 of the days, the coffee house day.
He ran the cleanup crew every Monday night.
Yeah, I'd be there on the Monday for the coffee house and for cleanup, and then I would be there on Sunday for the prep and the setup. As much as I could.
Yes, we were there all Sunday afternoon as well as all day Monday, and my husband was there with me all Sunday afternoon. So he had, 120 eggs to boil?
Yeah, I became the hard-boiled egg master chef.
You were a good egg.
Yeah, the only time ever I've been a good egg.
So that now has that changed? Are you no longer doing that kind of work over there?
I'm not involved over there at all, really, unless I take a day off from work.
And Renee, you just do Bible study?
Yeah, once a month I lead the Bible study, and every week I'm there for just hanging out. And the deal that I have right now with Father Joel is that I'm just there for community, and that I'm not there. I'm not involved in any of the labor of it all, and I'm not involved in any of the politics of it all. So.
So Father Joel has been left to hang and twist in the cold by his lonesome, eh?
Hi, Gina. Yes, he has to deal. If I just keep step back and just focus on my night and just focus on interacting with the kids, then... And by the way, it used to be kids. Now it's all of the homeless in general. That's another thing that's changed. The kids are kind of disappearing from our community. I'm not sure. Or maybe you could tell me more about why that is. But the more removed I am, then the better off it is. I don't have to deal with the politics of any of it. So
better off for you, but not necessarily for the unfortunate Father Joel.
I'm not sure what's going on with him. I don't get involved in the end of it. So
we've been talking with
Renee Curry.
And of course her associate and one might say licensed partner.
Scott.
You can prove you're married.
Scott Curry.
Check your license on that. All right. And you're feeding every Sunday?
Monday night.
Every Sunday as well?
Oh, Sunday in front of Borders on the Avenue at 2 o'clock. Yes. And here we are in the rain with our umbrellas.
And will you be showing up at the Thanksgiving Day relocated meal at the Civic?
Oh.
That's what apparently Pastor Dennis Adams, Steve Plaich, other groups have gotten together to do on Thanksgiving due to the fact that the county has abusively closed down the Veterans Hall without significant justification and refuses to open it up. Apparently they've moved over to the Civic, and the vets are refusing to be involved because they're essentially been sidelined here, but there are other groups that are doing it.
Oh, so that's awesome. I may even have to ditch my family to go to that.
Ditch them, man.
Are you going to be there?
Maybe.
Okay.
Thank
you. Be working, cooking turkey?
Certainly not. Working, that's a dirty word, my sweetie. Don't use four-letter words with me. Thank you. Talking with a musician who no longer spends much time in downtown Santa Cruz, is that accurate?
Almost accurate.
And why are you no longer on the streets of Santa Cruz? Let me ask you this. How many years were you playing on the streets?
10 or so.
And when did you stop playing?
Oh, like 2-3 years ago, but I don't want
to
talk.
And you're a little reluctant to talk. Are you afraid of retaliation, perhaps?
No. Those Columbine youth that attacked me are gone now, probably in jail. So.
Now, you were a guitar player. You are a guitar player.
Guitar player, singer.
Yeah.
And a singer. Would you like to do a little song for us now?
Oh, say, come.
No, one of your own compositions.
No.
She's very patriotic, yeah, folks. Yeah. Anyway, we've been talking. Give your name and social security number.
Stop
is not...
Robert Norris, and my number is 0123456789.
She's imitating me, folks, which I find questionable. Anyway, it is about 20 after 12 on November 8th, and that's the story from downtown Santa Cruz.
There was actually more of that interview. This is a woman who plays the guitar downtown but says it's become too coercive and restrictive for her, and she just doesn't do it anymore down there. And she also has, I guess, some concerns about the quality of the customers, the quality of the other musicians on the avenue. But couldn't get much of a statement from her. Steve, any comments on any of what Ronae Curry said? For those who are interested, of course, you can check out her coffee house on Monday nights at the Calvary Episcopal, or her beanies and burritos brunch, afternoon meal at Borders, in front of Borders.
No, that's interesting. I'd ask you whether or not Father Joel was still kind of laboring under this pall of ecumenical...
As far as I know, yeah.
...accusation.
Because
I did see him at one of the community meetings not too long ago. And I really never met the man, but he stood up and had a few things to say, and I was... His ramp, he seemed like a good guy.
Yeah, he actually, you mentioned he was at the Santa Cruz Neighbors Forum, about the social services deal with Monica Martinez, Homeless Service Center Director, and so forth.
And Eric, whose last name we can't...
Eric Seeley, bogus homeless research police officer.
And the woman from HPHP, Christine.
Christine Supple.
Yeah.
Or Sipple, I think it is, actually.
Christine Sipple,
as some have called her.
But he got up and had a few words to say about the homelessness, and basically in defense of homeless people, I thought. His tone certainly was. And particularly in that crowd, it was pretty courageous, and he seemed like he was a man of conviction. I don't know him, but so it's interesting to hear Ronae talk about him.
That would be damned.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
We have another voice in the studio, actually a radio broadcast from another show who's... stopped by to do some work of his own, but who also perhaps has some thoughts on some of these subjects.
Will webinar our show with his own dollop of political persuasion?
Perhaps. Oh, you want to sign in, Mr.?
Well, I found Jesus, is what it is.
I see. Well, you look like Jesus, so perhaps that's who you look in the mirror. I'm not Jesus. No, that's the other guy. But in any case, you do have a show on Tuesday night, Tangerine Dream, is that what it's called?
It's two shows. Coral does the music 7-8, and then we do politics 8-10.
Now, that was last Tuesday you did your show. What was the subject you discussed on that?
Well, last Tuesday I stole a couple of your guests. They came on the wrong day, so we just put them on.
Oh, cool. who were they?
Sister Elizabeth and Salvador Dalai Lama.
My goodness. These must have been guests that I recruited in my sleep at one point. I never heard of them. What have been the main issues on your show in the last month?
It's a free the land, so it's all about that. The private ownership of land is oppressive, is the form of oppression.
So you're a commie, is that what you're saying?
No, communism, I have no problem with capitalism. It's just the land issues.
So tell me, now what do you know of Father Joel? Because this is something I don't know all about.
Oh, I said,
him.
Be damned. I mean, it says in the Bible, Revelation, when Jesus is separating the lambs from the goats are the ones that didn't help out the needy.
Hmm.
So all these Christians that are opposed to feeding the homeless are all damned.
Yeah. Well, but they're living pretty well while they're here, which is the whole point, I think.
We're talking about the hereafter.
It's usually not the
here. You know, the devil's running this world, so sure, you're going to do great when you're damned.
It's fine here.
Yeah, so. Now, that's true. I mean, you know, you eat your hamburgers while you're here, but when you're gone, you know.
Have you ever had Father Joel on your show?
Last time I saw Father Joel, he was demanding I leave the property under threat of arrest.
Well, then that puts him squarely in the camp of how many other groups in
Santa not
Cruz?
Really. I mean, I would say, you know, it was a situation where we were doing some real organizing on one of the rare occasions when there was a large number of homeless people who wanted to.
Was this a Monday night?
This was on a Monday night. It was we had just successfully broken the bigoted policies of Jack's Hamburgers, and the Jack's Hamburgers had previously kind of colluded with or been pressured by conservative members, the Calvary Episcopal, Cynthia Matthews, and so forth. Those two, I assume, Cynthia Matthews. I don't know. She people of that social class, perhaps, and they'd stopped any homeless people that they saw sitting on the lawn, any people, whether they're homeless or not, who were sitting on the lawn across the street who looked tattered in any way, from buying, even if they had money, even if they were properly dressed, even if they had shoes and shirt on. And I actually, in the course of a week, through negotiations with Connie, the owner, she completely changed his policy, insisted that it had never been the case, which is neither here nor there as far as I'm concerned.
And you were instrumental in this negotiation?
This was a big win
for us.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Was it?
It was a big, it was one of our big wins of the year, and it led into the unsuccessful but rather colorful boycotts of Bunny's shoes.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry I missed that.
Yeah, that went on for quite a while. Yeah. We were actually down.
Now, why did that one fail and the other one succeed?
Yes, indeed. Let's contrast and compare.
Well, we never actually negotiated with Bunny's.
Homeless people actually eat Jack's hamburgers, but rarely do they buy Bunny's shoes.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, that can't be denied.
Interesting as Free has come to the crux of the matter.
And indeed. Well, that was
as
true.
As he always does.
It was true before we started. The reason we targeted Bunny's shoes was because they were one of four businesses that had asked for this really unprecedented injunction against two homeless musicians, Ana Richardson and Miguel de Leon.
Which was successful, by the way, right?
Unfortunately, the injunction became permanent a couple months ago, and even more than that, Miguel de Leon was arrested on other charges. He didn't violate the injunction. He was arrested on meth charges. I don't know if he's guilty.
Recently, 2 months ago?
Yes.
The case was finally.
Yes,
is that right?
There was a permanent injunction granted by Judge Volkman, and it actually was posted yesterday. We finally got the damn thing posted on IndieBay. And for those who are interested in reading this absurd injunction, and I'm not, you know, I don't believe in harassing people for using meth or selling meth either, much as I believe it's not the best thing to do, just as I don't believe in arresting people for selling Prozac and other debilitating drugs, far more debilitating, actually, in the long run, in terms of the numbers of people who are debilitated, but none of them are much good, in my view.
It should just be zoned. There should be a meth zone.
So you know, what happened with the protest at Bunny Shoes?
Well, Bunny Shoes went on for about 6 weeks, and we actually got some large numbers at a certain point. We had 30 or 40 people out there with signs. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. There was a lot of people, a lot of young people who came down. The point was that Bunny Shoes and one of the people signed on to this injunction, which the city attorney Barisoni got. It was a preliminary injunction which said that if Ana Richardson and Miguel de Leon were caught sleeping downtown, they would be arrested and jailed for contempt of court at night. And so the police then tried to arrest them during the day for this. Mm-hmm. And Volkman, to his credit, found that was not sufficient, that they were... It's legal in Santa Cruz to sleep during the day, and it is, you know, it doesn't violate the injunction.
Mm-hmm. But then, a minor victory,
but it was a victory.
One of the few times I've seen Barisoni get slapped down.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, then 4 months later, Volkman upheld and expanded the injunction. Made it a permanent injunction against these two. And the point of this is that, you know, if you don't like behavior of these two, whether it's because they're sleeping in the... One of the concerns was that De Leon would jimmy his way into the corridor between the Palomar Hotel and Front Street. If you go, if you walk through to the Santa, the coffee roasting, I mean, there's a long corridor. There's no, people aren't even there at night. The businesses are all closed there now. But at the time, I think Bunny's had a storage area there that they were using, Bunny's shoes. Oh. And he would go in there, and he would, he and Anna would sleep in there to get out of the rain, or to get, away. It was safer, I guess, to sleep in there.
So not otherwise disturbing anyone else.
No, not as far as I know.
And they didn't crap in any pairs of shoes.
There were no, there were no claims of fecal shoe destruction or anything of that sort.
No dropping of the ceremonial trap in the trowel.
And there was no, you know, there was no attacking poor defenseless women with hypodermic needles or. But these were homeless people who were violating the sacred property rights at night of people who weren't using their property. And also the people who treated them apparently treated them with some disdain when they went and told them, get out of here, we're here, you know, you shouldn't be here, you're, we're going to arrest. And they didn't react in a favorable manner to this because they weren't subservient enough. They were considered to be troublemakers. And so city attorney and the police had devoted a lot of time and trouble to targeting these people.
Much like they target you, Robert.
Well, luckily I'm not homeless. If I were, I'd probably have gone crazy years ago. I'm taking up meth much earlier. Who knows?
Well, they're not,
I can tell from your belly that
they're
not
successfully attacking him as much anymore because I'm always around town with him glowering at his enemies and attackers. And that seems to be working.
We're going to hear. We're not going to hear the end of glowering for a couple more weeks from this guy. He picks up a line and just runs. He thinks it's so funny. It's not that funny, Steve.
Okay, well.
Give it a break.
Hilarity is not ensuing?
Not at this point. But you seem to enjoy it, so that's what counts.
Getting back to you, are you thrown off the Red Church grounds, Robert?
No, I'm not aware that I think I went back in there and I let people know about different things.
Because, you know, I was saying that's an excellent place to have Huff meetings, really.
Yeah, I have not been. I've not attempted to throw a Huff meeting there again. But the reason for that is that,
I mean, I could go to them. I haven't been in a Huff meeting in a long time.
I know. You just we've been waiting for you to return, although I guess Coral showed up at the...
Well, you were saying that just the other day, that it would be nice to have a Huff meeting somewhere more
downtown
central,
where people could,
actually come.
You know, Ed always goes to the Penny U, so you'd be able to get him, depending on how it's time.
Ed Fry, the attorney and activist.
And there's a whole bunch of homeless there for the dinners, so it would be a really...
Right.
Because I thought it was really nice when we had it at the drum circle, because then you could go to the drum circle, you get sick of Robert, you can go
and we actually did plan Peace Camp 2010 at that Huff meeting.
I mean, even at the Abbey, we've had 6-8 people at the meetings the last 2-3 weeks, so I mean it seems to be picking up a little.
Well,
you'd be a welcome
trials,
addition, but... as always, of course.
Sam, weren't really there for about the trials. Nobody has showed up. Well, Linda LeMaster did show up about the trials, and we should talk a little bit about that because tomorrow will be a protest in front of the county building. That is to say, those who show up at 9:30 will be graced with some perhaps hot soup, hot coffee, I'm not sure what it's going to be, and maybe something to eat, compliments of India Joe Schultz, who is going to be down there filling our bellies, or so he promised. And
sometimes it's vegan?
Sometimes it's usually it's vegan, I think. And he it
nothing to the face, then, right?
Who knows?
Well, he serves calamari at his restaurant.
Interesting point. In any case, at 10 o'clock there's going to be a hearing.
He probably won't bring any calamari tomorrow, but you know.
Mark Garver, who is Linda LeMaster's public pretender, some call it. The public.
Is he any good?
I have no idea, really. I know that he doesn't return my calls. I know that he doesn't talk to me in the hallway. I know that Linda has asked him repeatedly to talk to me, but he doesn't choose to do that, at least not
but
so far.
Certainly not any measure of his...
No. I mean, there are a lot of people who find me difficult to talk to. I don't know why. I find myself easy to talk to. I talk with myself all the time.
But you were saying, we talked at the meeting, that apparently Tony Robinson, who is representing his
Anthony
PD,
Robinson, there are a number. Anthony Robinson is representing Crow, one of the people charged with the law that Linda is facing tomorrow in court. Her attorney, Mark Garver, is going to be...
Demur or something?
It's some kind of
so they're just going to set it for hearing.
Preliminary demur setting. It's not a very significant hearing, but it is an opportunity.
That's when you challenge the law of constitution.
Constitutionally. You challenge whether the complaint is adequately stated, and that could involve constitutional law.
Exactly. Well, it would not at that stage.
But our legal Steve here insists it couldn't. Whether that's true or not, Only the wise know.
You had talked to Tony Robinson, or he had returned your call?
He has not. He has returned my call, but we're exchanging messages.
Normally, a demur, though, is just they get to amend it, and it's not a big deal.
Absolutely, of course, You demur, they say an amended complaint, and that's just where that goes. Yeah. Of course.
It's just a time stretch.
In fact, they can amend it as many times as they need to make it
usually. It's happening tomorrow at 10, and at 9:30 if you want to be there for the kind of the, some of the, hopefully there'll be some speeches. Linda's not feeling well. I've just recently heard, got some emails from her, so I don't know how up she's going to be. I'll be there. Maybe I'll cooked up a flyer by then to describe the latest wherewithal. Haven't been writing much.
One of those with those Texas all centered.
It could be one of those exciting Norse flyers again. And it will be probably, at one time or another, put online for those who want to go to the indiebait.org.
Will you be taping all of this
Santa
for
Cruz website?
We're going to put up a flyer tonight to hand out for something that starts at 9:30 tomorrow.
That's correct.
Where will you be handing this out?
It's not going to announce that people should come to it. It's going to educate the public as to what's actually happening.
Oh, okay.
And what's happening is really going to be happening over the next few weeks.
So why aren't these trials being combined into one big one?
Well, for a number of reasons, as far as I know. First of all, I don't know, because I haven't talked to the public defenders.
And we don't
want
them to be.
Well, I think it's a good idea to separate them, because separate trial means...
another jury?
Another jury, and another chance to get a not guilty verdict or a hung jury. We're talking, by the way, for those who don't know, is the charge is lodging, illegal lodging, which is what the county sheriffs and, to some extent, the city police have used...
They had to use it. The
as a
building.
De facto sleeping
Penal Code 647E.
Penal Code 647
there was
is
no
state
county code.
Code.
It took them a month to find it.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but I know that they are using it, and they've used it in other jurisdictions to go after homeless people.
You've been arrested for that,
sleeping.
You?
I've been arrested for that in protests in San Francisco and Sacramento. San Francisco in 1990, I think, and Sacramento in the 93 or 95. All of us went to support the homeless of those
that's
different cities.
That's what it was, J instead of E, right?
Hmm?
647J?
Yeah, they changed it. It's gone to 647I, 647J, now it's 647E.
Over time.
It rolls around the alphabet a lot.
But you're saying the reason that you want...
It's a bogus law.
The reason we want to have them individually represented by public defenders is it uses up more resources. It makes it more difficult for them, you know, to prosecute these cases at all if you're using all of your PD time on these nonsense cases.
If you have PDs, yeah.
And also gives you more resources to actually consider the law, and different, you can try different approaches.
Exactly.
And you also can extend this whole thing over a broader period of time. And if it's a protest, presumably in some way you can try to create more media.
Now
we've not been very successful
media.
So
yeah,
far in the last month or two in that. Although in the previous months we got a lot of media thanks to the work of people like Curb Hugger Chris.
Oh, he's very good at that.
Yeah.
But he's no longer actively involved, though I believe he is charged with a couple of counts of 647E.
And I know he's got at least one.
Mm-hmm. So that, people are interested, come on down tomorrow, 9:30, to the courthouse at 701 Ocean Street and check it out. And the actual hearing
is
at
10
o'clock.
They're looking at 6 months a year, too, right? There's
and it's a misdemeanor.
It's up to 6 months in jail. That's correct.
Is that the max?
I think it's capped
6 months in jail.
6 months?
Misdemeanors generally are capped at a year, as you know, because the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony is the sentence. It says that it's usually they can serve, sentence you to county jail, and it'd be a year and a day because they give you good time and stuff like that. But usually anything over a year is state prison time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's how they categorize felonies and misdemeanors. It's just the length of time you're able to be imprisoned. Loss of liberty, basically. That's the standard. But in this case, I think you're right. They're limiting these to 6 months. That's what
I understand. I've been saying a year, but I don't think it's true. I think it's 6 months.
I wasn't sure either. I've seen it written both ways. So. Uh-huh. Who knows? They're always upgrading the law
And upgrading
the
population.
And they make new laws up every day at peace camp over at the city.
They're very creative there in the city manager's office.
They are.
Yeah, they're quite something.
Well, Robert and I just stormed the city manager's office only last Friday, the two of us.
City manager's office?
The city attorney's office, side by side.
Mm. Fair son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lockstep.
You can do that, as long as you don't bring a burning garbage
can. We charged in, unannounced, Robert demanding a receipt. And he received satisfaction.
After some time from the new employee there. Yeah, we're trying, I mentioned this already, we're applying to, we're setting up an appeal of the Norse Facer case where we were singing downtown, downtown. And we were absurdly found guilty of unreasonably disturbing noise. In spite of your testimony, you were actually
testimony that was negative.
Which will probably be quoted with reference to extensively in the appeal. So.
In any case, there's another unreasonably disturbing noise case which was resolved day before yesterday, or actually it was yesterday.
Yeah.
That was Brent Adams, Big Drum Brent, actually began talking about
it. If you're guilty, he's got to be guilty.
About an hour ago. And he was tried, and he was convicted, and his sentence was suspended. It wasn't even announced. It was they were delayed and suspended the sentencing for 8 months, though she initially insisted it was 6 months, but then she gave an eight-month period. Ed Fry pointed out to her that she has a little arithmetic problem there, but she insisted that six equals eight, or whatever she said, it's going to be where it was, and it was 8 months. And after 8 months, if he doesn't get another complaint for playing his drum downtown, then there will be no consequence to this initial charge.
So if he sufficiently limits the exercise of his civil liberties between now and then,
correct.
He'll be fine.
If he keeps a low profile and keeps his nose clean. In other words, if he doesn't offend anybody on Pacific Avenue who could file a complaint, then he'll be okay. Now, that's a rather difficult kind of row to hoe, I would think, particularly if you're a big drum Brent. Although Brent is actually, even though he seems more confrontational than I do at times, he's actually very much concerned with mediating. So, for example, he is the individual who set up the drumming rules at the drum circle.
Oh, is it?
There used to be, when the drum circle was still at the farmer's market and successfully resisted attempts by Sergeant Harms and the Downtown Association and Coonerty to move it for about 2 years, Brent Adams concocted a set of policies of behavior which he recommended to the drum circle. He posted it on the tree every Wednesday when the drum circle people came, and had to do with no drugs, respecting other people, not blocking cars.
And he eventually achieved some consensus in this thing?
Well, he didn't really tempt a lot of consensus. He proposed some rules that everybody really hard to argue with, and people kind of agreed with them. And Sergeant Harms is still running around muttering about marijuana use and that sort of thing, because people did smoke marijuana there occasionally.
You're not going to give that one up.
it worked pretty well. And Harms and his goon squads laid off for a while, or they kind of were peripheral, and until they did this coup d'etat, I guess, in the middle of the summer, where they simply expanded the farmer's market right over the drum circle area.
The artists against the drummers. The artist section, they moved there.
I don't even know it's art. Montre Srinath is not an artist, and it was his little coffee stand that sits right where the drum circle sits, as I've mentioned on a number of occasions.
Well, many of those new booths are some kind of Oriental food. I think there's a Mexican food stand. There's a rib joint, so it's not really, farmer's market organic fruits and vegetables that they expanded into that area. It's just commercializing. And so the commercializing drove out the drum circle.
Imagine that the downtown merchants don't like the farmer's market because it's competing for money just like the homeless panhandlers.
Yeah.
What's your view on that, Robert?
Say that again?
That the downtown association doesn't really like farmer's market.
Well, that's certainly been true in the past. I think, however, that now they may regard it as a kind of a draw to Santa Cruz, that actually it brings people into town and they spend money not just at the farmer's market but at the
businesses.
Changed
their tune on that?
I don't have a clear sense of it, but I think that may be the case. I know they were originally, like 15 years ago, very hostile, I think. But that, I think, changed. I remember reading some stuff about it in the mid-90s, that there had been a change in tune and to that whole thing. Initially, the farmer's market was in the area where the Taqueria Vallarta is now situated. It used to be a vacant lot after the earthquake, and then they moved farmer's market onto Pacific Avenue for a while, and then it moved to its location where it is now, which is a parking lot number, whatever it is, next to parking lot number 4 on, Cedar.
Across from the Red Church.
Across from Red Church. So what I want to do now, if I can find the damn thing, which is always a problem for me, is I want to play a little bit from, talk a little bit about this unreasonably disturbing trial that I was.
I didn't get an agenda when I came in here, Robert.
You come
and you should count your blessings.
We can have a
Huffman
here, Robert. We've got one more person than I've been in some of the meetings I've been with.
Well,
you.
We can give you one of Robert's agendas now, and you can probably finish it by next Wednesday, which is usually what we're always thinking when we're there.
This trial lasted about an hour. This was a trial of Brent Adams. There were only three witnesses: Brent, the complainant, who is a man in a business suit, who I think is an attorney, an attorney named Penrose, whose residence is on the second floor, right above Borders, as I believe, not residence, his office. It wasn't a residence, and Officer Peabody. And this was a case taken by the city attorney's office. I think the same city attorney who prosecuted me and Robert Facer came to the trial. I think his name is Ariano.
Yeah.
And he's a sort of a quiet little guy. and he's a nice guy.
Hey. Mm-hmm. And the phone line's open. You said little guy.
Yeah, I did, for sure. You know,
no hate speech, right?
fuck you, nigger.
Oh, my.
So,
phone lines are open.
Phone yes, of course.
427-3772 yeah, if you find
so
Robert
what
offensive.
So what I'm saying is that the city attorney's office was called in only because the day before, Ed Fry requested to know, to get discovery from the city attorney's office. They hadn't heard of the case. So I don't want to claim that they're taking a huge role in going after every street performer or mm-hmm. every activist. And Brent Adams is an activist. He burns the flag on the 4th of July as a First Amendment exercise, and he does so publicly. Hang on a second.
Okay.
You know. So the city attorney's office only got involved because they heard about it from Ed Fry the day before. Go ahead. What's your thought?
I just want to know he wants to go to those cops. You know, ride around with the cops and they won't let him.
Ride along?
Yeah, along. Well, is that something you can work off your community service? So if he does
that, I don't know.
You can do ride along with the police anytime you want. Just go over there and request
you it. Can't, you can't. Well, no.
He can't.
There are some who can't. They won't
is
let
that
you.
Right?
That's correct.
Probably won't let
I don't think they'll
either.
Let me do it.
Why wouldn't they?
Bad breath? It's hard to say what the
whole
reason
besides
might be.
That, I mean, you know, right. Yeah. I mean, something that they would ordinarily have to object to on some objectifiable standard, don't they?
I don't know. Too close a relationship with Tony Madrigal?
Yeah,
it
could be.
Hard to say what the idea.
Whatever happened.
I mean, you're not a convicted felon, but I know.
Not yet, but I'm working on that. Any case, getting back to the Adams trial. So anyway, there was the city attorney who was there. There were the three witnesses were the defendant himself, the complainant himself, and Officer Peabody, who issued the citation.
And the precipient witness?
The precipient witness, there was another witness that the defense wanted to call, and that was Wireless, who's the guy who plays with Brent Adams. Uh-huh. He plays, I think, washboard or something.
They wouldn't let him call him?
And they would, well, Ed Fry tried to call him, but Baskett, the judge, insisted on what's called an offer of proof.
As you want to know.
And the offer of proof, of course, is, you know, why are you calling this witness? What's the point?
It's relevant.
Why is it relevant? Yeah. Obviously, a precipient witness is completely relevant. You know, they can testify what happened.
We should tell the listeners that that's going to, if you ever try and defend yourself, you're going to get hit with, they'll say, objection, and then they'll say, sustain, and then you can't even enter your evidence. So what you do is you give them an offer of proof, and you tell them, you know, what the evidence is, what it's going to prove, and why it's relevant.
Well, the problem then became that Fry was, Ed has a way, he's the attorney who was defending Brent Adams. He has a way of kind of giving an introduction when he starts to speak. He'll say, Your Honor, what I'm trying to show, and he would be repeatedly interrupted by, give me your offer of proof. And instead of using the magic words, precipient witness, which means a witness who was on the scene, he kept saying, what I'm trying to say, he kept getting interrupted, and as a result, she just cut him off and refused that witness.
He was being cumulative.
But it wasn't
one witness. It's cumulative.
It wasn't really cumulative. Well, it may have been cumulative.
And Ed couldn't overcome
it may have been cumulative because the trial of Facer and Norris, my trial and Robert Blindbear Facer's, took about 14 hours, according to the city attorney.
And
there may have been a cumulative testimony
there may have been a cumulative testimony.
But you see, the whole point of all this, although we're merry about it, is...
But see, Brent Adams hasn't got a $250,000 lawsuit.
There is a real problem in Santa Cruz with the police misusing a law. That's the unreasonably disturbing noise law. The unreasonably disturbing noise law, it's an unreasonable law to start with, but even if you take it on its face as trying to stop people screaming at the top of their lungs in ways that have no political or artistic content whatsoever for a long period of time, which might be, you know, a basis for saying, hey, that's unreasonably disturbing noise, stop it or else we'll cite you. And it was pointed out by Baskett in this case that there's no warning requirement. So they don't have to warn you. They just have to come in and cite you if it's unreasonably disturbing noise. Mm-hmm. But there is, you know, for street performers and activists and political speakers and ordinary people on the streets and on the sidewalks, there is a First Amendment guarantee both by the state and the federal constitution. There's a free speech guarantee which says you have the right to use those sidewalks to communicate political and artistic messages.
Correct.
And because that's
even
true,
in the parking lot in Trader Joe's,
you know, it becomes an issue. Well, apparently not in Santa Cruz, but yeah, that should be there. I mean, we've talked about that a little bit before you showed up, and you know, but the issue then is, you know, why isn't referee Baskett, commissioner Baskett, referee used to be the title used by the previous court officer there.
And they stopped issuing whistles.
I guess. But the commissioner, Why doesn't she say, well, there is a balancing here, there is a concern about how can, you know, we don't want anybody to be able to say, I found this unreasonably disturbing noise, shut it down. There has to be some standard.
Absolutely. There's no objective standard.
And, I mean, or even a subjective standard. But there has to be something of substance in some way that would show, tend to show that there was noise that was hurting the ears, not necessary in connection with an activity mm-hmm. otherwise lawfully conducted, which is part of the law. So harsh or so intense or so prolonged or so unusual in its use, place, or manner. I'm kind of paraphrasing
well,
some
of the showing
law.
Was made...
And none of these showings were made by the prosecution,
no,
although, you know, and Baskett's responsibility as a judge, in my view, is to say, look, where is, you know, why was it unreasonably disturbing? This individual... Mr. Penrose, who objected to the drumming, which had gone on for somewhere between 20 and 40 minutes, and Brent pointed out that he always leaves after an hour because he doesn't want to disturb anyone, and he moves to the other spot. There are these two spots in town that he uses, O'Neill's and New Leaf, and he only does it once a week, and it's been done for the last 10 years, and he began it in order to... challenge what he felt was the chilling atmosphere that developed around 9/11 after people just stopped doing this stuff. I hadn't noticed that that was the case, and in fact, I was repeatedly arrested at the farmer's market that year because they wanted to stop me from giving out political literature in the farmer's market.
Oh, you won that, didn't you?
I won that one. They fired the director of the farmer's market. That was a victory. Well, she, I don't know if she resigned or was fired. I think she was let go.
Was there money? Did you hit him for damages or anything?
No. I was falsely arrested by Sergeant Baker twice. And
isn't that the guy that molested people?
That was the guy that was accused of molesting 10 women, but the city council decided they were all liars.
Well, what did it go to court ever?
No, it was never taken to court. It was the basis, though, for a movement to set up a Citizens Police Review Board, which succeeded until, of course, it was killed by the Rotkin Matthews Coonerty Council. Actually, no, Coonerty wasn't on the council at that time when it was killed.
There's no such board now.
And there is no such board. There is what's called a...
so now you can go back to
there is a there is a an auditor
exactly
who,
right
an auditor. Who does
it's
absolutely
exactly
nothing other than make a yearly
audit. He gets a nice paycheck.
He makes a verbal report to the city council.
I think he makes that verbal report to the city manager. I think in vain turn reports to the city council.
That should be, but I think he's. Yeah. I've actually heard him report to the city council. Maybe now does it to the city manager. Yeah. In any case, what we're about to hear, if we can, in the failing moments of this. Fading moments of this program.
We don't have to let Dennis in.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. Actually, we could lock the door and do a Vinny.
Oh, wait a minute.
Do a Vinny.
Probably in there.
No. We have a call here. Let's see. Hi, you are on Free Radio with the Big Three, Free and what's his name? Steve Plaich. That rhymes with H and Robert.
All right.
DCD.
His drum circle, Dave. All right, Dave.
Hello.
All right, Dave. Let's make it short this time.
What's that about, the guy getting a ticket for reckless driving on the front page today.
Oh, you were you?
What happened to him?
Oh, Tony Madrigal.
Who does he know in that big cement building?
Council member Madrigal, yes. Well, he certainly doesn't
know. Does he walk in there sometimes, or does he just, like, you know, kind of flip through?
Well, you know, we're going to have to leave that one for the next show there, because I want to get this
big grant on the agenda. Hey, you know, the drum circle's okay. One drive, or a couple drive-bys. We got
this is your report on the drum circle.
They didn't take any names, no numbers.
Is Brent playing there these days, since he can't do it downtown?
He never plays there anymore.
I saw one.
I play on holidays, because they don't fuck with me.
No, not
you,
but Brent.
That's all I am, because, I mean, I'm like Brent. You know, you got to pick out a good day, a lot of people. A lot more action, and you can get down there and kind of slip by. But
now, Drum Circle, Dave, was there? You say there was some police action yesterday at the Wednesday. I don't want to call it Drum Circle, but
the drum line now.
Drum, sort of off to the side of the levee.
Off the path, so
the drum squeeze, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's kind of like an eyeball. You know, kind of like, you know,
the
how
drum
an eye
oval, or the
know,
drum
with the lash and the, yeah, like we kind of move onto the path and then the cops come, we can move off the path, you know.
I hear you,
we all kind of like to drum together if we can. But yeah, they're, you know,
the
they're still hitting us
drum,
there, but, you know.
No, I don't think so.
It's just, if we could get back into the farmers, that'd be great. You know, if they cut back on those commercial dealers down there.
You know, I can get Robert to spring for a $30 space and just squeeze a drum circle in there.
You know, I've told you what you need to do is have all the drummers come back and do a little drumming up business down there. But drummers are not activists generally. You're an exception, Dave, perhaps, but I don't think most of the drummers are not.
So. Dave was at the Peace Camp original tonight.
Were you, Dave? Were you at the Peace Camp?
Yeah, man, but I didn't beat my drum because people were trying to sleep. Yeah.
The county building has been asleep for years. Time to wake them up, actually, but that's another story. Listen, I got to go on you, Dave.
Hey, you guys go and keep going, and I like what you're doing, and keep putting them down and knocking them out. Bye, you guys.
Thanks, Dave.
Take it easy, Dave.
All right, so a couple notes I made at this trial, the Adams trial, Brent Adams. So we mentioned the fact that witnesses weren't allowed to testify. This Mr. Penrose, the guy who claimed that the music was unreasonably, the music, which Ed Fry kept referring to the drumming as the music, and which I think is appropriate because that's what's, you know, the rhythm, the beat, the performance, at least, if you will.
He's not repeating the mistake he made in your trial where he kept calling all the things that happened noise.
Noise,
and
yes.
So it got in the record it about 20 times, and it was noise. It's not. It's speech, it's activity, it's something. It's not noise. Noise is the gravamen of the offense. It's not noise. So
well, unreasonably disturbing noise. Yes, you can make noise. Anyway. But
so,
in any case, Penrose admitted that he had Venser's disease, or I think it's called...
What the hell?
It's a disease of the inner ear that makes you particularly sensitive to noises. And so he was not a person as required by the ordinance, part of the ordinance, of ordinary sensitiveness. And that was...
Oh, there's grounds right
that
there,
was,
right?
And I was surprised that he would admit this on the stand. He actually volunteered.
He's a lawyer. He has to.
And so Ed pounced on this immediately?
Ed did pounce on this. Right. And Ed brought it up. But... Commissioner Baskett found...
She'll find a way to fuck you no matter what.
She found that nonetheless, it simply was unreasonably disturbing because Officer Peabody testified that he could hear the drumming from Rosie McCann's. The drumming was at the corner of New Leaf, half a block.
Half a block.
Now, drumming can...
I can hear the Metro Center's radio that far away.
And you can hear the catalyst all the way down the street. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, and it's after 10 o'clock at night when there's stricter standard.
Yeah, but they contribute to the tax base, Robert, and you don't.
Of course. Well, I'm not a drummer either. I don't... In any case, I've kind of pointed out some of the things that Baskett discussed. She was in a harsh mood, perhaps determined to have a relatively short trial. Her tone was stern, impatient, particularly with Fry and Adams.
Was she glowering at anyone?
Now, in a previous case, an attorney got up there, and there were some cases that happened before this case came up. And the attorney, you know, the defendant wasn't present. The attorney was present, some speeding case.
Yeah.
And the cop went through his rigmarole. And the attorney just stood up and said, "Your Honor, move to dismiss. My client has not been identified." And she said, "Granted, next case." So if you got an... And this was also an attorney that Commissioner Baskett held up the trial for. She said, "We'll wait till this attorney shows up because he may be late."
Is that right?
Yeah. Now, that could be a legitimate thing. Right. Maybe he informed the court... No, well, I can't say. She's perhaps Steve would say she's an attractive woman. I don't know.
Yes, indeed. I may say that.
Well, you have a case pending?
I don't know. Let's not go there.
Yeah, okay.
In any case, some other notes I made. There's actually more to say about this case, which I will say on Sunday. That's it. That's the day.
That's
on
right.
When I
you
come
go
back.
On and on and on.
I do. I'll be going on and on
tonight,
on Sunday at 9:30.
Yeah, if you could do a half hour show sometime.
It's impossible.
Will
guys
you be
like,
having that,
guys like you in the studio?
Will you be having that bon vivant raconteur and former city council candidate Steve Plaich on Sunday?
He may be showing up on Sunday. Let's see.
Hey, you're working
on
next campaign.
You're on
now,
free radio with two jabbermouths and me.
Hey, Robert, how you doing? Can you hear me okay?
I can. This sounds like Andrea.
Yeah, yeah.
How you doing?
Oh, hanging in there. I was listening to your, part of the show earlier about, I think I heard that part about Pastor Joel once before, and not too long ago, and I didn't really realize all that was going on, because for a while there, you know, last winter, you know, I was going to that Monday night thing, you know, for a while there, and in fact, I took a friend of mine who lives in Watsonville, who's he's kind of like a deacon, and he happened to be in town that day, and I said, "Hey, well, you know, they serve like dinner over here on Monday nights, and probably really like meeting the pastor." I don't know. I mean, I don't know what all things have been said about him, but as far as my personal opinion, I mean, I've been, you know, I've been grateful for, you know, that being there on Monday nights, because it, I don't know, I haven't really, like, been one of those that have been hanging out on the grass all day, but I've seen people hanging out there, and I'll tell you, I don't believe that needle's in the grass. I really just don't.
Neither does Andrea.
Some kind of people ain't going to do that out in the grass, Andrea, for one thing.
Andrea, neither does Rene, who was there and actually was the groundskeeper, so you two are on the same wavelength, and also... But the church elders want to throw Father Joel out because I think they think he's too liberal.
I heard it's a split
church. Think that's terrible, man. Because you know what? I mean, come on, you know me, Robin. I'm not really much of a religious person. But I'll tell you what, man. First couple times I went there, I mean, you know, you can get there like around 4:15, 4:30. Yeah, and that's when they have a coffee out. And they had donuts too. They always put like they always get all these donuts and they put trays on all the tables.
Andrea, you need to say no more because, you know, I'm the first to support any kind of food activities that involve community, whether it's a church doing it or a political group. You know, I get a little sarcastic if Obamatons do it, but nonetheless, I'm glad when people do it, you know. And so you should, if you're interested, come on down. We're serving food tomorrow at 9:30 in front of, you know, the courthouse.
Uh-huh. I'll tell you what, I think Pastor Joel's exceptional because even if you're not religious, you know, he'd come out and he'd have his guitar and there'd be like a couple other people on guitar and then, you know, Lee would show up and sometimes Lee'd be on the piano and, you know, he would introduce these songs and he'd like put the words up on the thing so, you know, you could see him from the tables. I mean, it's funny, you know, because he'd sing these songs and he'd get people singing along too and he'd actually make it kind of fun. It's not like when you go over to Elm Street and all of a sudden, you know, you gotta sit there and listen to some guy reading out of the Bible for an hour. You know, it wasn't like that at all.
That's the holy Bible,
like,
to you, lady.
You know, and then people would line up and the food would start getting served at 6. And a couple times I kind of missed out because I got there a little late and he ran out of food. But for the most part, the times I ate there, they were good meals.
Andrea, what you should do then is you might want to go with a petition and, you know, urge the people to sign up to support Father Joel. And
Penny U's doing that, too.
That's already happening, you say, Free?
Penny U is doing that. They're doing
Penny University, which also meets there around the same time in the evening in the next room. Wait a minute. They are actually trying to put together a petition to save Father Joel. It should be said, and I got to go on you because I only have about a few minutes left, so I'll give you a moment to finish up what you're saying. But
meals being, you know, served like that, that's one of the best places I've ever been. I mean, they've come out with, like, cases of, like, vitamin water, and we're just, like, handing out vitamin waters. You know, you can take, put some donuts in your pack. I mean, it's just really giving.
Yeah, they got a lot of
really kind.
They got good food,
thanks
curry.
A lot.
Thank you.
And thank you, Andrea.
It's ironic, though, that Father Joel is the one who ran off Rene Curry, who had a more liberal approach.
I don't know if you've read it.
That's what she indicated.
She was doing it every day, right?
She was allowing the youth to use the grounds to relax, to be there. And when there was problems, she would resolve them. She was establishing a youth ministry. She was sort of also making it a friendlier place. During the actual times of the Bible study area.
She's very nice.
And she was, mostly, it was mainly that she opened up the grounds to young people and to hippie types.
Hmm.
And members of the community, poor people, homeless people. And Joel, under pressure from the more conservative members in the church, made her stop doing that. And she quit. She said, I can't do a youth ministry if I can't be able to, you know, have the youth gather there.
So it wasn't Father Joel.
And she hit the streets. Well, Father Joel allowed himself to be used in that way. And he, in turn, is now being discarded because he's too liberal. In a way, it's kind of ironic. And in a way, it's poetic justice, but it's not something I support. I prefer to see.
That's why you can't compromise with the devil.
Don't call Cynthia Matthews the devil. Maybe a demoness.
They are the damned. They're refusing help to the needy.
Don't use that kind of line. I mean, I don't. We're talking about our city council members, respectful members of our community.
Future council members.
And
he's not damned. You're one of the sheep.
Thank you very much.
He's
one of the sheep. You're not one of the goats.
deeply city council.
A little too sheepish for
couldn't
me.
Couldn't Father
actually.
Joel use that, the necessity defense in church court that to avoid being
ecclesiastic?
We don't know.
To avoid being damned, perhaps he had to,
since
he had to get
since
help
we can't practice
home.
In
this
California,
was the Robert
course,
Norris
the
Bathroom
ecclesiastic
broadcast
course,
show.
It's
now the Steve and Free show.
You got your own show, Free. Steve, go get a show, will you? All right. So we have about 5 minutes.
By the way.
We have about 5 minutes left. And, yeah, no, I don't. I have no problem with your advertising your show on the air.
No, I was going to say some donation. You can actually donate in the name of a show. People want to donate to Free Radio. And I'm thinking that it would be a good idea to donate in the name of Skidmark Bob, Pop Defect. Send in a check, say that.
Why
Pop Defect Deuce, because he's behind a little. I shouldn't say that.
He's behind in his dues, eh? The doo-doo Bob.
Well, I mean,
in any case, I know we had a lot of internal chatter going on here. Next coming up is the from the cream to the drugs. We should the drugs. Yes, probably to do some drugs there. But it's from the cream to the from the cream of the dregs. Actually, we will be having that pot smoking, beer slushing, music slinging Uncle Dennis will be coming into the studio shortly.
Indeed.
You'll soon hear a pounding on the door demanding that we vacate. So I was going to play some interesting commentary, which I'll play on Sunday, about the Brent Adams trial. And hopefully, maybe I'll have written something about it. I've made a lot of notes that are all kind of sporadic and fragmentary. And I may put those into a story on ndbay.org/Santa Cruz. It is Armistice Day, but I don't think there's any armistice for
one
poor people.
One more phone call.
not downtown Santa Cruz, but let's... let's see what this caller has to say. Hey there, caller. This could be the last call. Who's this? Hello?
This is a announcement
Coral.
For Tangerine Dream Team person.
My ride is here.
Exit the studio.
So this
hello,
is,
Coral.
Yeah. Okay, well,
he doesn't have to.
This was
but if
the,
would like
the
to
professional
meet,
Bathroom Spears
he
broadcast.
Should walk down.
Turn into a sort of an answering service for other people's shows. All right. Anything else that you wish to say there, caller?
You got it all happening, and keep it happening.
Thank you. So we have the Drum Circle Day level of content going on the air. It's always very gratifying. Steve, thanks for coming in.
Enjoyed it as usual.
Maybe you'll be coming back on Sunday.
Yeah.
You always have some reports from the street, and maybe you'll have some. I'll have a report on the Friday court appearance of Linda LeMaster.
Yeah.
And again, you can sip some soup or maybe slug some coffee.
One more for now. The phones are ringing off the hook.
We are not an
now.
Answering service. This better be a content-heavy call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Rob, I want to make it a point. You had a Huff meeting in front of that church with a bunch of kids with me and a whole bunch of other activists that day.
We've already talked about that, actually.
You know, and hey, man, why isn't that happening no more? And, man,
I'll tell you. Because
that's that Reverend Joe, whatever his name is.
Well, Joel threatened us with arrest. We had to leave. That was one of the reasons it didn't happen again. That's the very liberal Joel that we're now defending, ironically.
Yes. Yeah, but, and hey, man, they had a great gig going there for the kids, man.
Yeah, well, thanks, caller. I'll explain
Peace,
that in
man.
About 30
Santa
seconds
Cruz,
I have remaining on the air.
Rock on, DCD.
So, yeah, the we don't normally hold meetings at the... the reason there was a meeting held there was because... It actually wasn't a Huff meeting. It was a special organizational meeting because we had just had a victory in the Jack Hamburger's rule change, restoration of rights to purchase by homeless people. And we were now talking about whether we could take another step in... addressing the criminalization of the poor downtown by challenging the people who set up this injunction against these two performers, against these two homeless performers. And we did. For 6 weeks, we did protests, which I think had a certain educational value in the community. They certainly didn't stop the injunction, but they showed that there was a response by some of us in the community that may have made people think a second time. Maybe not, because the injunctive process has rolled on. We have right-wingers now in power in city council. But Steve Plaich, apparently, was moved, apparently not by our Bunny's boycott, which he never heard of until his show.
True enough.
to run for city council. And actually, Steve, you oppose the sleeping ban.
Of course.
You probably oppose many of the downtown ordinances.
I do.
And
have said so publicly.
And have said so publicly. And you're also a known needle exchanger.
I do that as well.
And you prevent the suicides of people who otherwise might best be left to their own devices.
As best they can.
So that's really it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'm going to put on a little more music as we await the arrival of the next talk show host, who isn't really a talk show, it's a music show. It's Uncle Dennis.
Can we look forward to some more of the San Francisco Mime Troupe and hilarity ensues?
We can, plus caustic commentary of a sarcastic. Is it sarcastic or sarcastic? You say sarcastic.
I say sarcastic.
In any case, I'll be back again on Sunday, and maybe I'll see you tomorrow on Friday at 9:30 at the County Building, where we can sip coffee together and bemoan the fate of the world and support the rights of poor and homeless people.
I am losing control of my mind. I am so weak and so alone.
I thought I could be in for a nickel. For a nickel, but not for a dime. I'd take just the kit, but not the caboodle. I'm sinking in the quicksand of greed and haven't much time. Oh my Shamina, 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 do you know what you mean to me? I'm your love, Seth Shamina, and you're my Zarina, but I fear you and I will never be. Now I find what I had is what I wanted, and that who I was is who I want to be. The Pulitzer would be mine for the winning, if I could report all the things that I see. Oh my Shamina, 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 do you know what you mean to me? I'm your love, Surf Shamina, and you're my Zarina, but I fear you and I will never be. Shamina, 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 I fear you and I've got to warn her, we'll never be we.
Kings of British Boogie! You know what I'm talking about? Savoy Brass!